Hello and welcome to GFW Radio. Yes, we are back. We're here. We're going to record and we're actually going to post it today. I promise. It's going to happen. It's going to happen or we're going to shoot Ryan.
What the hell?
It's as...
That's not the first time you've threatened that.
No.
That's true. I did it in our very first ad. And we got a hate mail from somebody. From somebody because they posted that ad on like on some other Ziff Davis podcast that wasn't like the game group. Uh-huh. Like some tech podcast. And then I got some like angry email that was forwarded. Some dude wrote like the CEO of Ziff Davis. It's like, you know, I don't find it amusing that one editor threatened another editor with violence. What kind of company are you running there?
Well, always some. And so our promos
some
never appeared on those podcasts.
Douchebag
again.
Dad. Anyway, this is Jeff Green. It's November 13th, 2007. I'm here with some of the editors of Games for Windows, the official magazine, and they are.
Ryan Scott, not shot yet.
Sean Malloy, also still among the living.
Sean Elliott, but you got to hold on a second. I got a phone call to make. Hold on. Let's see if this works. sorry. This is business.
Thank you for calling Cash Call. If you do not have a loan with Cash Call, please press 1. This call may be
monitored or recorded for quality assurance purposes. Sorry. They better pick up quick. I don't have time for this.
Thank you for calling Cash Call. This is Kent.
Hey, is this Cash Call?
Yes.
I called for $217 on a previous Cash Call, and I wanted to know if I could make this Cash Call for the $217 to pay back my other Cash Call.
What do you mean by this Cash Call and that Cash Call?
Well,
only
like
one company.
I know, but I called like it's Cash Call. Like so, every time I call in my mind, it's a Cash Call. So I know there's the Cash Call, the company, and there's me calling for cash. So I called for cash, and I borrowed that money. But now I want to borrow more money to pay back the other Cash Call.
What's your loan ID number?
I don't know. Well, first of all, what's the APR again?
Do you want to apply, or you already have a loan with that?
I have one. I want another one to pay the other one off, but I want to know the APR.
Okay. Well, if you have an existing loan, you're going to have to pay that one off before you can take out a new loan.
But that's what the new loan is for, to pay off the other Cash Call.
Okay, well, if you have a loan with us, you have to pay it off in its entirety before you can take a new loan.
Okay, well, what's the APR on the other one I have?
I want to know unless you have a loan ID number.
Isn't it? Because I think they said it was like 99.25%.
Okay, well, again, I want to know because I don't have anything about you.
Well, here's something about me. I want to round the 99.25% up to a cool 100%, if that's possible.
Okay, well, again, I'm not sure what you're speaking of. Do you want to take a new loan?
I called for cash. I got to go. I need cash. I hate that number. I hate that phone number.
Wow.
Sorry.
Okay.
I thought he would be helpful.
He wasn't very helpful. Take care of that in person.
Our own Crank Yankers episode.
He wasn't helpful at all.
He wasn't helpful.
Do you actually have an account with these people?
No. That was the one with Gary Coleman on the TV talking about how his family won't give him no money, so he called cash. Called for cash call, and then it's like he's like, only 99.25% APR. All right. So we got a show.
That guy over there is on the other end. Like, man, some moron just called.
I was hoping he would, you know, I was just going to try to go for infinite regress. So I was like, okay, well, we could set you up for that. And I'd just be like, well, can I make a cash call to pay off the one I just made? If I call you right back, can I pay that one off?
I just snorted.
Alas, it did not happen.
So I got one little thing unrelated to anything that's bothering me right now, which is that right before we came in here, all of EGM was in here, and there were like a lot of them for one thing, which pissed me off. Yeah. Their staff's a lot bigger than theirs, but they were like they were all eating together, and they were loud, and they were like it was like a college party. They were like throwing food and
they're
laughing.
Having fun
and
together.
They're having fun together. What the fuck's up with that? Why we don't do that? We're all just like,
that's
we eat at our desks, and, like don't even talk to each other.
When I first joined EGM, every yeah. day we would all go to lunch somewhere and we'd eat lunch out together.
Yeah.
And then that gradually transitioned into we all get it and bring it back and eat in the conference room here together.
Uh-huh.
And then when I switched to GFW, CGW, it's like sometimes we all go to lunch, we all go downstairs together, then uh-huh. we all say we want something else, and then we go back to our desks and eat it.
And we're all just sitting at our desk by ourselves. That's a PC gaming thing.
I'm busy.
It is.
Right. We can't socialize together.
The sad, it is. I think, you know, like in grad school when I was like playing hardcore Team Fortress Classic with some fellow grad students and teachers, we'd go out to dinner or to have drinks or something. At some point, we'd start talking about Team Fortress so much, we'd all like, let's all go home and play. So like, let's all split apart so we can come back together and play this game online.
Right. Right.
And it seems so right.
See, the console gamers, they all like sit there together and they hang out. Just like console gamers do with their games. And we all go back to our separate PCs and just sit behind our monitors quietly eating our sandwiches, not socializing.
It's sad.
I feel
bad. They need to do something about that because a lot of times, you know, when you have friends over, instead of just like, let's watch TV, you find yourself like, there's so many good things on the internet that it would be rad to watch together.
Uh-huh.
You're just going to all huddle around the monitor.
Uh-huh.
I want like some broke-ass theater local area to just like run the latest in internet content. Like everyone just goes, they serve
YouTube videos.
They serve drinks and shit, yeah, and it's maybe like $5, and they just show. But that's the thing is like they have different hosts, and then they're known for their ability to come up with some like truly good stuff that you haven't already seen.
Uh-huh.
And so like, you know, Wednesday nights would be like whatever.
Don't you think eventually there's going to be a TV show that's going to be like America's Best YouTube Videos or something?
There already is, and that's where they go to die. Shit. That's where internet memes go to die on WebJunk 20.
So they have like Techno Viking on there now?
Next month they'll have Techno Viking, yeah.
Yeah.
They'll have the guy talk. Look at this crazy German.
Uh-huh.
He's dancing.
I still worship him, though.
The Techno Viking?
Even if the meme is dead.
I hate him already.
Okay, so one other thing that happened when I got into this room, or right before I came into this room, was I found out from some anonymous person who works at Ziff Davis on the like financial corporate side, that every single week this person gets totally pissed off at the Sports Anomaly podcast because they're in here and they're so loud apparently that she's got to close her door and put on her headphones to not hear these guys podcasting, and wow. She could still hear them.
I can't sympathize with her there.
Like a half hour.
What? Because how do you be so what loud you on the podcast? Do, what do we do here now to piss her off now? What would I have to do?
How many times?
God damn it, Sean!
There it is.
How many times when we've been recording have people come by the door and looked in when I'm doing a Hero of the Web or something and give us the stink eye?
We've got the eye.
Oh, we have got the eye a little bit.
So mostly we're in the other studio. This one, right. We have a curtain around us. There's a big black curtain, so we can't really
That's
see
true.
Anyone looking. Downstairs.
They used to do it, though.
Fish aquarium.
One time, remember, Sean, we were recording one of the rap intros or, mm-hmm. like, one of the reading intros, and the guy comes in. Is this going to be going on long? Mm-hmm. And then he, like, slipped right back out before we could even answer.
That was downstairs, right?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, but you made it go on longer by interrupting us. Thanks.
I just don't – what do they even have to talk about that's so aggro?
Sports, need to have those, man.
Yeah.
What is
do
that?
Do you not like the sport, Jeff?
I like sports. I do.
That's the thing today. You got to get aggro about everything. It doesn't matter how irrelevant or pissant it is. It's got to become something worth laying your life on the line for.
Who, me?
Misplaced passion.
Review scores, anything.
We got a lot.
Anything anyone makes.
We got a lot to lay on the line today. And with that, let's get to it. Did you like that?
No.
That was hot. So let's...
We do have a lot. I want to very quickly apologize for the kind of cluster borks that have been going on with us podcasting. It's been particularly lousy timing. I assure you it's been lousy timing for us as well because we have had a lot to talk about with all the great and exciting new PC releases that we haven't been able to talk about on this podcast. So now today we've got a ton of them, and I hope we can get through them all.
Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare. Pick some place to start. That's good.
Call of Duty 4. Yeah. How many of us have played that fine PC game?
You're looking at me and Ryan.
Sean and Ryan are sitting here looking like
we have.
Right. You two have.
Both
though.
Of us have played it. You finished it too now, right?
I have finished the single player. I have not played any multiplayer since I was in the beta on the 360. But I played the single player on the PC.
Been playing the multiplayer nightly and played the single player. Messed around with it quite a bit. Played some of the levels a second time. And that caused a stink on... posted on forums about it before I got to talk about it on
it
the podcast.
Here. Oh, shit. That's right. It did, didn't it?
I said something negative.
What did you say exactly?
Well, what I was complaining about, here's the thing. It's like, so now we're going to, you know, talk about the bigger picture in the game. But in the, somehow in the context that came up, it was just about, you know, the degree that the game immerses you in the experience that, you know, that's creating and the, you know, the combat and stuff. So the spawn system came up. And that's basically where in the game enemies, you know, appear somewhere in the world where your view of them is occluded by an obstacle, you know, a wall or something. They're in a house oftentimes. And they'll continue to, you know, repopulate the world from the same spot over and over again. And what happens is that, you know, not only do they do that, but they post up to one, sometimes two specific locations where, since they're doing this, and if they're doing it long enough, you see just this huge pile of bodies stacking up at the same corner where they're all, you know, running to, and you know to wait for them. And you even get a sense, I almost had a sense at times where you could say, this is the order it's going to happen in. The one guy's going to spawn, he's going to go to this window. This guy's going to spawn and go down. So it was almost like I was playing Point Blank or something. That's that, you know, really fun Namco, light gun shooter. And so that specific comment, it is important, but it's not everything. I mean, one thing that happened was the hot or not mentality that you get, you know, with games and message boards. And that's if you have something negative to say, that means, or just one even one critical comment, that means that the entire, that the game in its entirety is horrible. You don't like it. You can't recommend it to anyone, or vice versa. You know, if you say something great about it, that means, oh, you love everything about it. Which kind of happened with Crysis 2, and that, you know, I was talking about it on the 1UP show last week, and I didn't have the chance to, wasn't able because of embargoes to talk about the last section of the game. So it kind of seemed shocking when the review actually went up and they saw that, well, my perspective on the last part of the game is kind of at odds with the first one. So
did you like Call of Duty 4?
Let's
set the internet denizen straight.
I totally like it. And there's just, like, I think it's a great game. It's not the best single-player game I've ever played. I mean, I think even more, you know, right now I'm playing Area 51 Black Site came out today, too. That's another game where, you know, clearly Call of Duty is a certain subgenre of shooter. And that would be just, like, super linear. Not only, you know, logistically, you know, which would be, you know, the vehicles and all the things you can do to get around the level, but so the level spacing is pretty small. You know, the acreage is pretty finite. The things that the enemies do are always the same. You know, all the stuff is very, very prepared for you. So in that sort of a game, it shows you that they really know how to do it well. And when you compare it to, you know, I've only played like the first, you know, level or so of Area 51. But when you go from Call of Duty 4 to that, you're like, wow, you can do this sort of like hyper-structured stage play that Call of Duty and Infinity Ward make, and you can do it really well. And then this is what happens when you don't do it well. I mean, where it's just ridiculous. I mean, you feel like, Sean, you were watching me. There's in the very first level in Area 51, you get in a Jeep, and of course you just get on the gun. You're not driving the Jeep or anything, and you just shoot at things, and the Jeep drives around. This is also something that was a tradition in the other Call of Duty games. There's a level like it in Call of Duty 4.
Sure.
Here, the intensity was just so low. You're just driving around this aqueduct, and then you come upon guys, and they're sitting behind a bunch of explosive barrels. So you shoot the barrel, they blow up. And as I was playing it, I was doing kind of like turntablists and stuff, guys that compete in the DMC. Like, they start throwing in body tricks into their performance because it's, like, not just enough to, like, juggle a couple records. So you can, like, do a spin, right? And then you hit, like, the crossfader with your butt cheek. So I was like,
I do
doing
that all
spins.
The time.
I was like, I had like one hand on the mouse, you know, I was controlling the gun, and I was like, I would see some dudes in it with the barrel, and I'd be like, bitches, and blow them up, do a spin, come back, grab the controller, turn around, and there's some more guys.
Pretty impressive.
So that's how, but that was like, it was just totally boring. This is so completely boring that I'm like, and it's funny, of course, you know, the game's called, and again, now I'm talking about one level of Area 51, so don't, this isn't a review of Area 51, but it's a critical commentary on the first level, which was utter shit. And, and it's like, oh, it's very much like what? What does this remind me of? And Ryan's like, dude, this is like Area 51. And he meant the old one in the tavern, you know, where there's like a cigarette burns and shit all over the gun, over the plastic
guys
guns.
Popping up.
Yeah, it was like that. But so what Call of Duty 4 does, in my opinion, that makes it work is that they understand... Well, they understand also that their game, because it's so intense, because the sound is so spot on, and the feedback that you get from firing the weapons, and just the creating the illusion of just like just combat turned up to 11, mm-hmm. you know, shell shock and all this, that they can't, that they're going to fatigue you if they just give you that from start to finish for 6 hours or whatever. That's mm-hmm. just going to drive you nuts, right? I mean, anyone, you after a while, you're like, God damn it, I got to take a break, you know? That's mm-hmm. why there are rounds in between, you know, boxing matches and stuff. I mean, they're mm-hmm. rather matches divided into rounds. So, and then they take this other thing that they've always done, is, and that's jumping from theater to theater. You know, in the World War II cases, you might be on the Soviet side, you might be with Brits, you might be with Americans. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of been like this arbitrary jump there. Arbitrary, you know, not so much insofar as that, like, all these nations and people and people from these nations fought in the war, but it wasn't like they had ever communicated with one another or knew one another. Mm-hmm. So here they take the same theme and then they find a way to make it make sense mm-hmm. so that you still have level-to-level variety where the tones are different, you know, mm-hmm. degrees of, you know, color use, saturation, the different actual things you do. They find ways to, you know, so you have the sniper missions and stuff. Yep. You have the, I know we're going to want to talk about it, the AC 130
yep.
Sort of death from above mission. What did they call that?
You mean what they call it in
the name of the mission. Yeah, I forget the specific
name. Oh, geez, I can't remember.
Missions. But yeah. And all those things do help the game. I mean, in the same way that Prey's pacing in Half-Life series, mm-hmm. you know, it help it keeps things fresh throughout.
Uh-huh.
But what happens, and the reason it was a point, and the reason I wanted to make an issue of the combat thing is that at the same time, you have these phenomenal graphics. The game is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even more so, when you go to, you know, the UE3 engine-based Area 51, and everything just looks like tinfoil, and everything's already looking tawdry. Something else there, too, another sideline observation is that, you know how every time there's a new generation of hardware that comes out, and new, you know, new engines and stuff, and at first, even mediocre games, technically mediocre games, like, look stunning.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that phase where you're like, I tend to, during the beginning of a system's life, or for PC when you know, there's a new card upgrade or whatever, or some new engine like Unreal 3, I'm more willing to play games that I know and I've been warned are pretty mediocre experiences.
Yeah, because they look cool.
Because they look really cool.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I think for me, Area 51 is the game that made UE, it put the end on that phase for UE3 for me.
Wah, wah.
That soon, where it's like, wow, it's just is not.
That's Area 51.
That combined with the release of Crysis and Call of Duty 4. So uh-huh. Call of Duty 4 has, you know, limitations and stuff, but it does the stuff looks great. It looks really natural and everything. So now you have that, and you have this, you have all these ingredients to make something that's going to put you in this combat scenario that they're creating. But then what happens for me is that a bunch of enemies come out when I'm fighting down a street or something, right? My natural psychological instinct is not, let's run full speed into these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And the game actually discourages you from doing that on
right.
one level because they'll rip you up instantly
right.
and you'll die.
Right.
So then you stop, you take some cover, you see your other guys providing the visual cue, telling you guys in your squad or that you're mm-hmm. working with, say, hey, let's stop here, thin these guys out, and then we'll try to move forward.
Right.
So what happens when you do that, and it's I don't think this is a case of like me playing a game to break a game or playing it like at the extreme limits to see what I'm able to get away with or to sort of like figure out what its limitations are.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a very natural, like I first noticed it because I'm like doing just that. Hey, ton of guys, stop, shoot these guys, then move on.
Mm-hmm.
Except as I sat there, then they kept coming back out. And then I was like, I stopped thinking about, oh God, this is crazy. I feel like I'm in some approximation of a combat zone, to thinking about the system, thinking about the structure and the way and the artifice that makes all this stuff possible, right? And I don't think you want to do that because you want to be, like I'm saying, you want to be in the shit or whatever, you know? And instead, I was like, okay, here's this guy. Here he comes again. And so you just keep shooting them, and it's nonstop. And then eventually you figure out, oh, it shuts it off when I go up next to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the problem, is that the game doesn't offer that kind of – it's missing that sort of – like if they want to have respawning enemies in a building – okay, that's one thing, but they needed to have one more little sort of clue or something in there so that it didn't break that illusion. You know, they needed to have to give you something to move forward, to have you move forward, other than the fact that if I don't move forward, they're going to keep respawning.
Right.
You know, I mean, because yeah, and it if you do sit there and wait, it gets ludicrous because you'll see them coming out of like one little shack. It starts looking like a cartoon or a clown car.
Exactly.
You know, there's like 50 dudes in one like 4x4 shack.
And they go to the same spot every time, and that's important too, you know. So
yeah.
you're like, oh, okay. And then, yeah, you turn up, you know, you turn up the body count to, so you, to, you know, because it's one of the settings in the PC, like insane body counts to keep them in the world afterward. And you go in and there's like, it's like a charnel house in front of like a stack of sandbags because the guys just kept doing it, you know?
I do agree with you about, in general, about the variety of the levels. I mean, I thought it was a great game. You know, I'm rattling for sure. I thought it was, you know, it was one of the first shooters in a while that I wanted to play all the way through just because I wanted to play it. I wasn't writing about it or whatever, but every single mission was so fun and was so varied that it kept me going forward. The pacing is fantastic in Call of Duty 4. And, you know, it's, of course, it's like very manipulative. It's very much, like you said, it's very linear. It's a Disneyland ride. They're kind of throwing one little, like, trick and novelty at you after another, but they're basically really good ones. Like, I felt very much along for this ride.
Right. You know? And I felt the same way. There were times when maybe, I don't know, I felt like, again, like, say, they're the playwrights. They're, you know, responsible for the sets, and there's all these other actors, and my lines are very much prepared for me in advance, and you have to do exactly that. Sometimes, though, they don't provide that script for you to read to, and then they'll punish you for maybe, like, getting your lines wrong to an extent that seems a little bit arbitrary.
Right. Oh, you shouldn't have gone over here, so I'm going to blow up a car so you
to
die.
To stop you.
Yeah.
Or, say, for example, you know, like, I ended up, I know a lot of people, some parts I was able to do in a single pass that other people told me they had to do multiple attempts on.
Right.
But for me, the very part where you lay down in the field and the tank, the BMPs, you know, armored vehicles and troopers walk through and you're a sniper and you lay there, I had to do that over and over again to the point that by the time I finally finished it, it was nothing but, okay, I no longer saw anything. I no longer saw it as I'm hiding in a field and there's people looking for me, but like I'm playing this game. It could be dots. I could just be seeing this as like some sort of vector graphics. And
right.
Like, this is exactly how I have to do it. This is the only way it's going to work. And
that took me about three tries. But when I got it on the third try, I was so relieved because I was getting the sinking feeling in my head that it was going to take me forever. But that level was, I mean, I experienced some of the frustration of that one. But again, that was one of those ones that I thought like, wow, this is actually something I've never done before. Like, this is very clever, you know, to have you laying down in the grass while these guys are sweeping over you.
Like, that's because you never made it past the first room full of crates in Metal Gear. Or played Splinter Cell.
No, I played Splinter Cell, I did. But
you described yourself as a crate in Metal Gear.
Yeah, no, I didn't get past. That's right, you could walk as a crate. Mm-hmm. But that was the thing about Call of Duty is that it inspires all those different emotions. You know, in that particular one, it's like the tenseness of, I don't want these guys to see me.
Right.
You know, the other one that you alluded to that was just, I thought was just freaking brilliant is the gunship one.
Right.
I always get the name wrong because I don't
know. It was crazy how well that section resonated with people, just, you know, listening to friends and reading posts again online, because everyone singled that out as like, wow, this was crazy. And then I went to you and I was like, wait a minute. And I was like, you don't know what this is from, right?
Right. I didn't.
And so I sent you some links that were on YouTube.
It creeped me out even more. I mean, for people who don't know, there's this one level in the game where I'm going to say is it's this plane and you got like stuff to shoot. So what's actually the technical?
It's an AC-130 gunship, also known as codename Spooky. It was used in the Vietnam War.
We're getting macho nerd on it.
That's
but
macho.
But yeah, no, it's
very macho.
Yeah, it is very macho. Wargasm. But yeah, it's basically an aircraft that flies at you know, relatively high altitude above a battlefield, or might not be a battlefield in this case. It could be, you know, an area.
It's actually like
isolated combat.
It's a cityscape.
It has quite a few big guns on it and has, you know, infrared and all sorts of other, you know, high-tech tracking abilities. And basically what happens is the interface naturally from the weapon systems on the AC-130 already very video game-like.
Yeah.
And I think to the point in general that when you have, you know, sort of intelligent discussions about, you know, combat and stuff, you know, contemporary combat, and people worry about the levels of – because before, you know – originally, you had people, you punch each other, then you hit each other with rocks, then you hit each other with swords, and there's always this, you're very aware of what you're doing. And then when, you know, rifles and stuff come into play, and arrows, then there's this other layer of abstraction where I'm pulling a trigger, I'm not actually, you know, you have to get gross, but we're talking about gross stuff. This is a game that's basically about murder, you know, not murder, actually killing. Depending on the game might depict a few things that could qualify as murder in a court, but and then you get to this point where, yeah, you're looking at a screen in black and white, and you see these little things moving around.
These little dots.
The degree of abstraction is very video game-like.
Right.
And you pull a trigger, and you aim a crosshair, and they disappear.
You just see a puff of smoke.
Right. Yeah. And then so what they've done, I mean, it's interesting, is they've taken war as it's beginning to resemble video games and then made a video game about war to resemble war that's like a video game, you know, and it's got this cool vibe to it. But then because of that, because it's so minimal, because the actual, you know, point of view for people in those situations is so stark like that, like this could be real. And then what they got, and it was so important, was that instead of F yeah, there are a few moments when the guys that are in the plane with you, you know, the spotters, pilots, and other people, crew of the ship will say, like, you know, boom or something like a boom. But if you watch the videos of these things that are recorded from actual missions, there's this eerie sort of clinical, like lead them by another 4 feet. You know, you'll hear like, you know, in Apache videos and stuff too, you'll hear pilots talking to the gunners and saying, okay, you got him. Okay. Oh, like that's a kill. 2 more feet forward.
Right.
Hit him again. He's still moving.
Right.
And it's just this very, so what happens is when you play it, you're like, it's just, it makes you think about these
things. That's exactly what happened to me. And like you said, I hadn't seen the YouTube videos yet, so I didn't know that it was based on reality. But, you know, you get behind this gun, the screen turns black and white because that's what, you know, you're looking through the scope of the gun. Mm-hmm. And they have you, you know, picking off these people down below. And it's such a freaky disconnect that, like, I had never experienced before. I mean, I've shot plenty of guns in video games over the years, but it's always like you know, with guys falling down. But here, you're way the hell up. They can't see you. You don't see the bullets. You just see a puff of smoke. And then it's exactly what you said. It's the eeriness of the clinicalness and the complete mundane tone of the guys that are sitting on the plane with you. That's the only sound you hear in that level. And they're just like, move over 2 feet. You got him. That's a kill. Mm-hmm. And as you keep doing it, it's just really creepy.
Right.
I mean, it really freaked me out. You know, and then when I actually saw the YouTube video and saw that that's exactly what it was like in real life.
But part of the reason I showed you the YouTube video, and it's difficult to watch, and we keep saying YouTube, but I mean these, like, if anyone is really interested in this sort of stuff, go to like militaryvideos.net and see everything you need to see. But is that when you see it, I was trying to make a point that, okay, we're all of a normally functioning mind is like just absolutely capable of differentiating. Like there, I'm like, we're it's still resonating with us. We're like, oh, I see why this is like kind of weird. You know, this is kind of, it makes me feel something. But I'm like, okay, watch the real thing and tell me what happens. And then I was like, I know 2 minutes into it, I know you probably had a knot in your stomach. I mean, you were feeling like,
yeah.
I mean, we're just capable. We're like, we're capable of differentiating that, okay, this is real and there were lives lost no matter how abstracted it appears. You know, through these, you know, monitoring systems and stuff. And when you're done with that, you're like, it sits with you for the rest of the day. I mean, at least for me, I feel so uneasy. And it's like, wow, should I have watched that?
Yeah, right. I mean, it did creep me out while I was playing the game. And it surprised me because I'd never experienced that in a video game. But you're right. I still knew I was playing a game. When I actually watched the real life video, I made it about 3 minutes in and I had to turn it off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's one reason why,
like, I can't watch people really killing people this clinically.
We don't have so much to fear about video games turning us into thoughtless, you know, people who don't give a shit about human life. And
yeah, except for Ryan.
Ryan, yeah. Well, that's different.
It's always the quiet ones.
Ryan nodded. Said that, yeah, quietly, that's right, asshole, and you're first to die. Yeah.
So a COD single player, another thing that gave me a different perspective is that I ended up playing it after I played Crysis. And we'll talk about Crysis later, but one thing to note there is, you know, we're talking about the stealth and all the ways that these sections work, and it's like, in Crysis, stealth is also a significant part of the gameplay. However, rather than laying still for people to pass, and then when they've passed, you continue to go on, and they're only going to pass in one direction, and they're sort of able to kind of like veer toward you. It's funny to manipulate it where you're like, oh, I saw they walked over here. I'm just going to go to the far right or something. Yeah. And you see they kind of like somehow manage to turn toward you, even though the path is this way, and then go and follow the contours of the path. So the difference between
like a very specific cat and mouse game with a few people, and it's suggesting that they're looking for you, and you're able to play with their perception by, say, like, let's throw a stick over here or something like that, or let's create some diversion. And it's just a much more organic and immersive sort of stealth to me. And then when I compared that to, like, what I said by the point at the end where I was like, it was very clear the dimensions, the very, you know, limited dimensions of that stealth section, it was like, yeah, like, it's cool, but it's not that cool to me. But again, well, like you're saying,
yeah,
you know, after that, then, you know, you have the segment where you, the person that you're with is injured. You have to carry him, but you also have to set him down to fight, you know. And they, just through the raw, I mean, just the bulk of
the different
many
scenarios
there are.
Exactly. I mean, I think that there's some are hit and miss, but there's so many and they're so varied.
Exactly.
It's, there's like a smorgasbord of fun little gaming in here. And yeah, some of them are dumber than others.
Right.
But like, I definitely credit them for like really thinking it out and making a fun amusement park of a game there.
Yeah, totally. Know? Yeah. I it's limited in replay for me for that reason.
Yeah,
and I suspect that over the years it will we will come and look back at this kind of game as something a little closer to like a Dragon's Lair or something. And I don't mean that as a huge
insult.
No, I know
what you're saying.
But I mean where, you know, where you're like, because immediately everyone you say Dragon's Lair, everyone laughs, right? But I love Dragon's Lair when it came out. I have no idea how much money I spent on it, and at the time that was awesome to me, you know. And that doesn't mean just because we look at it the way – we only look at it the way we do now is because of all the things that have happened in the time since then. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that I think at some point maybe they'll continue to be like just viable. People will do things with them to make them work all along, or we could get to the point where all these other solutions with AI and scenario making and all these things make it – become cost-effective enough so that people just like, hey, why don't we do that? It's an option.
Well, there's also nothing wrong with the game being like, you know, a great – a great, great experience that's only great one time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
Yeah.
I agree with that.
I'd say most of the games I have never replayed. Even right. The ones that I think I could replay, I just, there's too much else to go
right,
to.
Right, there's always the next thing.
Yeah.
And of course, the Half-Life series is very much a game of this sort.
Definitely.
People bring that up a lot. There's some differences. I think that the characterization in the Half-Life series is superior, and I think that even there, I mean, without even going to the obvious examples, which would be like, you know, maybe the last section in episode 2 where it does open up more and it's not entirely linear.
Mm-hmm.
It's more not so much that, it's just the fact that you got, you know, the puzzles, the environmental puzzles to solve and all these other sorts of things that go beyond just the
Call of Duty.
Shoot.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You also have Alex's ass, which is an incredible asset in episode 2.
Last thing on the single player for Call of Duty.
I'm just saying. Yeah.
What about the story point? It was very clear. You know how they were like, okay, there's the Middle East, and then you go to some like you go to very specific locations in Russia, and then you have the Middle East. But
everybody
the map,
does that.
But no, they don't.
Well,
even
I mean, like
Area
I mean, like,
51 has got Iraq.
Does it? Well, I was thinking of TV. I was thinking of 24. The entire last season of 24 was everybody equals 24. The entire last season, it was your country. You know, they never said the country.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, they're not alone in that. I mean, but the thing that's curious to me, though, and that gives me sort of feeds a conspiracy theory is that they show the map, a visual map of where you're at.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's very clearly Saudi Arabia and on the Red Sea side, which is also where, you know, of course, Mecca
and Medina
are.
It helps like me to not know geography.
Yeah,
I think they're counting on 99% of people
they don't
playing this
know.
Game to not recognize that.
Right. So there it's very clearly, you can clearly understand, right? Then that would mean that the game is depicting, okay, spoiler time. So, I don't know, plug your ears if you're listening right now. A tactical nuke going off inside, you know, the Islam's like, you know, the most important, you know, place in the world for Muslims. And I mean, yeah, that's controversial stuff. And we saw how people reacted to some silly Danish cartoons. So they don't want to deal with the trouble. But
but
the conspiracy thing is that why is the map in there is like maybe someone on the team or maybe even Infinity Ward wanted to have it. Mm-hmm. And it was maybe the publisher or other that came in at some point and said, no, well, let's just say it's nothing. And it makes sense, too, because, of course, it's you're having an Islamist revolution in the way that the story goes. It's
an Islamist revolution in a country where they have a president instead of a king, you know. Mm-hmm. But you're like, this story would not fit Iraq. This story right now would not fit Iran unless it was taking place, you know, several decades ago. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's a perfect fit for Saudi Arabia. But yeah, just a point.
I think you just take this shit way too seriously. I wasn't even paying attention. So I guess you guys keep talking and tell me when the cutscene's over so I could shoot more shit.
I'd like to count the number of people who are playing this game who actually know what that Saudi Arabia has a king.
Right.
Oh, I thought they had like...
Yeah, or could play Saudi Arabia on the map.
Right.
No,
that's two layers. I'm like, what that deep.
So you should try multiplayer on it. I mean, you played it on Xbox.
But I loved it on Xbox, so yeah. And it's the same deal, right? You level up and unlock weapons and all that.
I think it's exactly the same deal, except you got lean, you know, the option to lean left and right and just...
I get achievements, though? I need my achievements.
It has challenges.
Oh, no, that's no good.
Not
I need achievements.
Achievements.
No, sorry.
The capital A achievements.
Yeah.
Really? You're not serious, are you?
No, I'm not serious.
Okay. I'm not. But it was weird. Of all the talk prior to, you know, because I wasn't invited to the Xbox beta. Poor me.
It's because you're a hater.
Because I'm a hater. Yeah. You got to be careful what you say about games. You don't like to talk.
You love everything, Sean. You'll get more free shit.
Exactly. Games are serious.
But no one was like, you know, was like trying to describe. No one just said basically it's Call of Duty 2 multiplayer, except almost every weapon's you know, is automatic and can potentially be accurate at any range. And then there's airstrikes and there's a persistent, you know, ranking mm-hmm. thing. But I mean, in the shortest sense, if anyone's familiar, if you're a PC gamer and of course you played, you know, Call of Duty 1 and Call of Duty 2, it's got the exact same feel. But instead of, you know, of the usual setup where you're like, okay, I'm going to, Jeff, you keep trying to poke your eye.
Going on with me today.
Are you sending me a message?
No. I'm sending myself a message.
So instead of the something that I do miss about COD 2 is that, you know, you have a bolt action rifle.
Yeah.
And you'd use that for distance encounters. And it's really satisfying because, I mean, not just the clickety-clack thing, but you have, like, you have that one chance, and then your reloading is going to take a little bit, you know. And then if they get close, you switch to your submachine gun or something. Here now, I mean, you have sniper, you know, weapons and stuff. I haven't really found a map where, maybe one map where it's the kind of weapon that would make sense in the way that it did in the map called Bocage from Call of Duty 2. But it's like you can have a machine gun, you know, like a SAW or something, squad automatic, and you shoot across the map, and if you've got the right perks attached to you, it's like it's just about the same as anything. I mean, you just put the crosshair on their head, and you're going to hit them.
I love being a sniper, but I fucking hate snipers. When I get to be one and I'm picking guys off from across the map, I'm always kind of laughing behind my monitor.
But
when I get picked off by a monitor, I mean by a sniper, when I get picked off, I'm so mad. I'm fucking lurking, sniping, piece of shit. Get out there and fight.
There's so few maps in COD4, though, where they have like just these big empty fields of view where you have to cross them and basically be at a serious disadvantage. And there's tons of, and because of the way the spawn system works, they can appear behind you at any time. They can just spawn in behind you.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. I think my biggest problems with the game are the spawns. And the deal with COD4 multiplayer is that it takes, there's like X number of potential spawn points in any map. And then it says, like, if you're in a team-based game, where are the majority of your teammates now? We're going to spawn you in one of those fixed spawn points closest to them, right? And that is such an awesome solution in some ways because it means that you don't have this, like, where the hell are my teammates? How am I going to catch up with them again? Or rather, let's go around this huge map looking for someone to fight or looking for some kind of action or anything. Mm-hmm. So they totally, like, nail that with that. But the downside is just that there are often moments in any game where there's a lot of potential for exploitation, and that's when you see a group of guys throw your airstrikes on it, throw your grenades, keep throwing your grenades on it, because chances are not only will you kill those that are there, but others that are appearing in that area too. So you get those moments where, for me, the equivalent of being a sniper, you know, hating a sniper is coming in and like an airstrike blows me up. I spawn again, and then the guy's airstrike bottom a helicopter, and then there's the fucking attack chopper ripping me up, you know. And then you do it a third time, and you're like, there's a grenade that got me. Fuck!
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I think that's a huge part of multiplayer is making excuses for everything and being mad at something.
Well, of course, yeah.
It's such a – playing competitive multiplayer games is such a, just an angry, miserable business when things aren't going your way.
Yeah, when you're losing.
It just
when you're losing, yeah.
It's so easy to just get turned into just this irate
wretched piece of shit, you know. And then you're in team speak and you got to tell each other, like, chill out, Corky.
Yeah, the most fun to me with that game on Xbox Live was all the shit talking that was happening amongst team members
about each other.
Yeah. Get off my team, you fucking piece of shit.
Like, you know.
Who are you calling a piece of shit? Where do you live? I'll come kick your ass in real life.
Yeah. I'd like to see you try, faggot. You
know, nonstop.
Why'd you say that, Jeff?
I'm quoting.
I know. No, that's probably the most used word on Xbox Live. that probably is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is like, it's kind of like in every game there's something in whereas in, you know, Team Fortress 2, it's criticals. He got a crit. Oh, great. You got a crit, so you won. Now, the problem of having persistent ranks and the ability to, you know, unlock new weapons and new properties for your character is that, oh, great. You poop socked it, so you got your god character. That's pretty fun. Come back here again, level 41, and show me how it's like to have no recoil, to have 3 grenades, to have... like extra stopping power. I would have this great gun that I can't ever get unless I'm lucky enough to kill you with a grenade that accidentally falls on you. Then I can get that. But I mean, though, I don't think these are necessarily fair complaints. Well, in some ways they are, but it's like, I'm just saying, I'm commenting not on the game at this point, but on just the nature of multiplayer.
Well, I think giving people excuses is vital to maintaining a healthy player base.
Exactly. Yeah, dude, it is. It's like a good, you want to build for it in certain circumstances. However, that said, when you start off COD4 multiplayer, you are at a distinct disadvantage.
You're a level 1 dweeb. Yeah, you're a noob. You got nothing.
Yeah, because they have. I mean,
how do you get hooked up with other players at that point? Does it try to put you with the other level 1 noobs?
Not on PC, even? Dude. Mm. No.
Oh, shit, really?
You can't even. Like, that's one problem with it. Is like
they don't have level filters, or
not that I'm aware of. And the server. You know, this is crazy. Like
they got to get that going.
If you ever want to fault something about the game, like about the multiplayer part of the game, there's like it's like a trampoline. It will just push you back harder because there's some like very credible excuse for everything, right? It's like, oh God, I preferred it when they didn't have this radar bullshit. Why do I have to spend half my time like looking at this radar and knowing where people are at and worrying about them knowing where I'm at? Well, it's like, you can turn the radar. A server host can turn the radar off, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you're bitching about airstrikes, they can turn the helicopter off. They can turn the helicopter and the jet off. They could turn, you know, either or. And on. You can make it so that some people can't use some class or weapon. Every single thing is a variable that a server host can manipulate. However, you can't search by these criteria. So unless you're networked in some way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's not immediately helpful to you because if the server's not called No Radars, Have Fun, then you go in and you look and you see if there's a radar or not. And so similarly, there's like no friends list. So finding a game, the browser is really inelegant. So it'll just keep pinging and it's very successful. So there'd be 3,000 servers up at a time and your friend's like, I'm in. Okay, it's Team Deathmatch and it's called close bracket, 59th bracket, smiley face. Whatever.
Equals minus. Yeah.
Yeah, so I can't wait for it to come out on Steam, and I hope the friends list works for it there because I really want to see all of the Steam options.
Well, until then, I'll just join a noobs only server.
Right, noobs only. Yeah, first time players only.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Yeah.
So it's a fun game, and I think the like to put the end on that would be as you do rank up, and after you get past that initial disability. Then it does really become fun to mess with various combinations because you have 3 perks. You have a primary, secondary weapon and a type of explosive.
Mm. Well, it's like an MMO in that way.
It is.
No one likes to be at level 1.
And some maps are good for, but also in an MMO where you're like, I'm going to be going up against these guys or this is the makeup of my group. Like, and you figure it out and you have a number of presets. And so you just pick this one. I'm going to this map. This is actually a perfect map. Say for example, the map is very small and close quarters. What you could then do is be a quick, move quickly, which is by carrying nothing but the lightest gun you can, use your knife all the time, sprint around and equip martyrdom. And what happens is you see a group of guys, you run into them, stab as many as you can, the rest kill you, you drop your grenade, and then it blows the rest of them up. So your ratio is always going to be like 1-1. It's not going to be like 30 kills and 2 deaths. It's going to be like 50 kills and 50 deaths, but you'll still like end up with the highest score on the thing.
Right,
it's great for ranking up. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be one example. And all those sorts of combinations, there are some that allow you to basically make yourself into a turret and all these things.
They may prove, some of them may prove like annoying in the long run or unbalanced or whatever, and that's what patches are for. But I mean, it's great. It's adding longevity to the game.
And also, you know, credit here that they've got both a single player and a multiplayer game that are great totally in their own different ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there haven't been that many games that have been able to deliver on both without compromising on one or the other. Or maybe either actually only offering one. So they went both ways with this, and they done good.
I hope they get the
You're
guys
about
that
to
made
play with that tape, are you?
Me about
don't
no.
play with that tape.
I'm all fidgety today.
I hope they get the guys that made the
problem is
the expansion for the first COD to do one, because it would be interesting to see how it would work with like a few vehicles, like a BMP and a Jeep or something. I like the what was it called? United Defensive expansion.
Oh yeah,
that was
good.
A lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Those guys were definitely capable of they got it basically. They understood what with their campaign what Infinity Ward was doing and what made their game good, and basically, you know, reproduced it to it. Mm-hmm.
So GFW says thumbs up on Call of Duty 4.
Stop reading one complaint and getting your panties all twisted and
internet morons. Yeah. You hear that? We're calling you out, internet stupid heads.
True.
Internet stupid heads.
Right. But we got more games.
We have a lot more games. At this rate, we're going to be podcasting till midnight.
I know, we're already at the we should take a break moment.
Holy shit, we should take a break now after one game?
Yeah.
We got to go on. One more game, then a break.
One
more game.
Let's do a quick one. Sam and Max.
What? So Sam and Max Season 2, Episode 1 came out
today?
On the 8th, I believe. So you can get that like on I think it's on Steam, on GameTap and all that. But first episode of the second season of Telltale's episodic Sam and Max adventure game series.
They continue to be on a roll with the episodic releases.
Right, they are the one company, we've said this before, but they're the one company that's really stuck to a pretty solid release schedule.
Bravo. Right.
I mean, they're a lot smaller and
right. I mean, they understand what it means to be episodic. It's a good episode. I would say it's one of the better episodes.
Does it continue from season one? Or is it like, you know?
There's a few kind of references back to season one. You could certainly jump into it. Without having played that,
so it's an all new story.
Do they keep the structure pretty much the same? Because in season one, you always expected that you're going to be going to Bosco to buy something. You're always going to be going to Sybil to.
They mix that up a bit. Like cool. You know, every other episode, you know, you get a phone call telling you this is what you got to do: mm-hmm. buy the thing from Bosco, see what Sybil's wacky new job is, solve the trio of puzzle trios, and wrap it up.
They don't have any kind of like Nikki and Paolo sort of thing going on though. They didn't introduce like new characters that are making you go, where the hell? Where they are Sam and Max? Why are they
like
talking
some
to
alligator with them the whole time?
Yeah, why are they talking like to Fran there? And
there's a
Jack?
There's a couple of new characters. Well, there's one of the dudes they introduced that hardcore Sam and Max comic fans will know is this crazy private detective named Flint Paper, who's Sam and Max's insane next door neighbor. And Sean's about to laugh at me here.
Laugh? Quit blaming everything. I'm just thinking about how I got to call Cash Call back.
But a lot of the Sam and Max hardcore fans were asking about that particular character for a while, so they added him to the game. And there's a new like location on Sam and Max's street. It's like this diner.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, and
you had to worry about.
Doesn't it sound great?
I'm sorry. I love Sam and Max. No, I'm dragging.
So the whole insane plot of this episode is that Santa's gone nuts, and you have to go to the North Pole to figure out why he's outsourced all of his toy making labor and locked himself in a room with a gun.
Isn't them doing a Christmas episode right now kind of like Fred Claus coming out right now at the theater?
Yeah.
You know?
There's some jokes about that.
Oh, they are? They're making
fun of
that?
There are some jokes where they're like, why are we doing this? It's the middle of November.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, then they're okay.
That's fine.
They're moving, yeah.
Because I don't think they probably did that in Fred Claus. You know, they probably weren't saying.
Did you see Fred Claus?
Yeah, you didn't see
Fred. No,
don't
but I saw the
preview.
That preview alone offended me. How many fucking more Santa Claus movies do we need?
They need
see Miracle on 34th Street, one? The end.
Nah, the Christmas Story is good. That's worth seeing. Yes. Again.
You got, Nightmare you got, Before Christmas.
You got the Santa Claus, and you got the Santa Claus 2, and you got Elf.
You okay, know? There
the
are
Mrs.
some
Claus.
Good
don't forget the Mrs. Claus.
Wait, those aren't good. You trying to say the Santa Claus is good?
It's Ryan.
I haven't even seen it, and I know it ain't good.
It's got to be better than Fred.
I'm just saying they're dumb Christmas board. Movies.
You know, I saw, I'm sorry. Have you seen there's a preview for some new Dustin Hoffman movie with... with Natalie Portman.
Oh, Mr. McGonagall's Wonder Emporium or something.
Yeah, it's but like, it's like a rhyming
Mr.
title.
Wonder Emporium.
Wonder Emporium, yeah. And this movie looks like such a piece of shit. I saw, what's it called, Dan in Real Life the other night with my family, which was a pretty good movie with Steve Carell. And there were a bunch of previews in a row, and they were all comedies. And they all got like a fair amount of laughs. And this thing came on, this Mr. Magarium's Wonder or what. And the theater was fucking dead silent. It was just like you could smell the bomb in the preview
itself.
And that's
rare for that to happen in a theater because normally people laugh at anything.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It was like, wow.
The second I saw that, I was reminded immediately of a Simpsons episode from like 10 years ago where Troy McClure, his big comeback movie after his terrible career, you know, dive was the fabtrabulous cabtraption of Professor Cubulus Q. Frank or something like that. I immediately thought of that when I saw this. Yeah. And it was just like...
Yeah, as soon
thing,
as you see
like,
Dustin
oh,
Hoffman
man.
On the screen with all these like CGI toys, you're just like, oh, dude, what happened so to your good. Career? On the other hand, Natalie Portman's in it, and she looks pretty good as always.
Nope, this reminds me that I used to work in a movie theater concession stand.
I did too.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Theater,
wow. Did you have to close, clean that shit up, the nacho cheese machine and the popcorn machine?
I played every role at that theater at one point. Yeah.
Wow. You were the Renaissance man of the theater.
Dollar theater, too, so that's some nasty
oh,
stuff.
Man.
I would do this thing where like I told everyone to go up in the film booth and then to look down. And then you know how the ushers, you kind of like sometimes when you're in a theater, they'll like do a little check. They'll walk down the aisle and back.
I used to do that.
And then I'd do that with the flashlight, but I would do like this thing with my leg where I made it look like my ankle's all gimped out and I'd drag it behind me. So I'd drag down the entire length of the theater, all serious, you know, and then do the turnaround, like drag it in this big wide arc and like it was a whale tail or something. And then just go back up the... That's not funny. But I did it. But I did it.
I like to point out that Sean just stood up and acted that all
Yeah,
time.
He did. And then, like, if we were filming this podcast.
And then I caught like what time I was taking the trash out. And because you know how when you work in a gross-ass restaurant like that, they got the fryers and you got to take grease to the special receptacle
yep,
in the back.
Yep, you can't dump it in the
Nowadays,
garbage.
Like the hippies would come and ask for it so they can fuel their lawnmower with it or something, but there are these
before
kids
their hacky sack game
making sweet and tender love like right back there by the dumpster. And
what?
Instead of being all cool about it, I ran back in and got everyone else. I'm like, come check this out. Then we open the door and we're all staring and they're like,
wow,
it was a good one.
Yeah. So back on Sam and Max, how'd we get there?
Santa.
Oh, yeah. Santa.
We get sidetracked
bad Santa.
So easily.
I'm sorry. You were talking about Bad Santa.
Hey, Bad Santa. There's another one.
I wasn't talking about Bad Santa.
Oh, Bad Santa had Lauren Graham from Gilmore Girls in it.
No.
Awesome movie.
Go back.
Bad Santa was kind of decent.
Because it had Lauren Graham from Gilmore Girls in it.
That was the one. The kid had a stick or something, huh?
Yeah.
He had a carved stick.
And Lauren Graham. All right. So, Santa. The Bad Santa in Sam and Max.
So, Sam and Max, Season 2, Episode 1, Ice Station Santa. Good game.
When someone describes those games, sometimes you just gotta also you have to end it with just take my word for it. It's funny because like
Sam
describing
and Max's, yeah,
like the Abe Lincoln one just sounds so not funny to someone who doesn't understand or hasn't played Sam and Max and knows if they like it or not.
Right?
Yeah, Abe Lincoln comes back.
Ryan, yeah, there's a talking Abe Lincoln
president.
Head.
Oh, wait a minute. This
is Ryan's like, genuinely into it though. I hear him.
It is really good
all day long it when is. He's playing. You hear him like do your laugh, dude. Do that laugh you do.
Huh.
You hear his laugh.
It's not your performing seal.
He'll be laughing hard. He'll be laughing hard when he's playing that. I'm like, what are you doing? Playing Sam and Max.
Awesome. Sam and Max is funny.
They are very good games.
How far are you?
I'm only three episodes in.
Oh, okay.
But I'm liking Season 1 a lot.
I steamed up the last episode of Season 1 the other day, but haven't actually loaded it and played yet.
It's a good one. Sam and Max, I think I might have said this on one other podcast, maybe it was our aborted one, but
Yeah.
Sam and Max and the Phoenix Wright games on the DS.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of the closest we've come to sort of the good franchise adventure games of like the Sierra and LucasArts days.
The Phoenix Wrights are holding up for you?
Phoenix Wrights are good.
Okay.
If I were going to make a list of the 10 best adventure games I've ever played, the most recent Phoenix Wright would probably be on it.
Really?
Yeah.
You're including all the old LucasArts and Sierra games?
I think so, yeah.
Wow.
Or blimey.
Phoenix Wright's really good. Hmm. And Sam & Max is really good.
Did you play Sanitarium?
I did not.
I did.
You did?
I love Sanitarium.
Wasn't that an awesome game?
It was an awesome game.
Now in the kind of forgotten dustbin of PC gaming history.
Very much so. That was forgotten like weeks after.
After it came out.
Is it on GameTap now?
It should be. If you're listening to me, Valve, please find Sanitarium. It was made by DreamForge, a now, I'm pretty sure, defunct company.
You want Valve to find it and put it on GameTap?
No. Did I say that?
Yeah.
You did.
Oh, really? Well, that would be kind of fucked up. No, Valve can find it and put it on Steam if they like, if they prefer, if they want to go that wacky direction. Otherwise, they could put it on GameTap.
Valve can do whatever they want.
Should we take a break?
Let's take the break.
We're taking our obligatory break, and we'll be back with all sorts of more fascinating and amazing things
a virtual to talk about.
It would. But.
Fine, you can cut that.
I think I'm going to leave that.
All right, leave it.
This 1UP podcast is brought to you by the Doritos Presents Unlock Xbox Contest. 5 finalists remain. Now we need to pick the winner. Visit snackstrongproductions.com before November 18th to play their games and vote for your favorite.
And we're back! You like that?
I like that. Sounds like Hellgate.
Oh, nice!
That's the best segue I've ever heard.
Hellgate, yeah. Man, we sure waited a long time to play that game.
We did.
I still haven't played it.
You suck. Well, you get out of here. I can't believe it.
I think we didn't just wait. Like, we kind of waited to get our free copy.
We waited to get our free copy. Well, Ryan gave them all out to, like, street urchins or something. There were 5 that we don't have anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to those.
They're all to the same person for some reason I don't understand.
Yeah.
Just in case.
I think we're all over the map on our opinion of Hellgate. Aren't we, kids?
It sounds like you.
Sounds like we're on the same page, kind of.
Yeah,
maybe.
I think we're probably all on the same page.
Yeah, just I think a little so.
With degrees of depending on your tolerance for shopping and killing.
That's the game.
Yeah, that
it's
is the game.
And killing game.
Sounds like a girl's game.
You want to take this outside?
Shopping and killing.
You like Diablo?
Yeah, don't you like the Diablo games, Ryan?
Fun fact, I have never played Diablo.
Holy shit. Right. The things we learn about
that,
this guy.
That
how did you
was
get
a series,
job here?
That was a series that I missed.
How do you miss Diablo?
I didn't like play it.
What?
You know what? I didn't get I didn't. I didn't
this is a
get
staff
in,
of posers.
I didn't get into Warcraft until Warcraft 3. Okay. I later got into StarCraft.
Okay. I beat you on
you
that.
You know what? I need to re-interview you for this job.
Dang.
And in the re-interview, you don't get the job.
What the hell? I see how it is.
The thing with Diablo, though, I mean, of course it's got to come up, but, you know, made by some of the same people. But that was always one of those games, and you ask people, why is this game so good? Make the case. Why do I need to go back and play it? At this point that I'm hearing about it or at the point that I have a PC capable of playing it. It's been a few years. And the case has always been, like you were saying about Sam and Max, and those are generally cases I'm suspicious on still, where it's just like, you just got to play it, or it's the certain something, unnameable something about it. And it'd be like, yeah, the gameplay actually is boring, but it's something about collecting. And then what I was hearing, you know, this was interesting to hear from, you know, from Rory, who was a big Diablo fan, played it, you know, nonstop, hour after hour after hour, and is not so interested in Hellgate after playing that, is that it is like the same game, but then that's what's missing from Hellgate, is that whatever
that certain something
indefinable aspect of Diablo.
Yeah, for me, the Hellgate is very much Diablo, and it's not even like being in 3D is about the only advancement it's made, because you still have the same random dungeon. I was actually surprised at how Diablo should work. Like,
me too.
The advancements were like micro advancements, things like being able to break down things in your inventory instead of having to go back to town to sell them. Those are how I were counting the, you know, the ways, or like the barrels don't, when they explode, they don't hurt you. And I was like, oh, good, that's an improvement.
Right.
Other than that, I'm just like, this is exactly Diablo.
Right, right down to the red and blue orbs on the side of your interface. I mean, it's frighteningly like Diablo.
Right. But it doesn't have that Blizzard something.
Polish?
Okay, even...
There is, it does have a kind of junkiness to it, in my opinion. The overall feel, it's often called polish, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, I hate to use the term, but in this case, I feel that, yeah, like there's, it's lacking that. I mean, it feels, a lot of MMOs strike me that way too. And I think looking at World of Warcraft, that might in fact be the only MMO that doesn't seem like it has that little element of junkiness to it.
Mm-hmm.
Even ones that I really like Auto Assault was totally junky. Great game.
You mean like they didn't hire a real art director sort of thing? Or
stuff like that, yeah. It's the combination of, I mean, a lot of it's technical limitations. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have that many enemies on screen, when you have that many players connected to the world, and so it's, you know, combination of, yeah, the art direction, but the animation and all these other things. Mm-hmm. I think probably in Warcraft's case, it's the animation that really, I mean, the art design that's really cohesive.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, like Tabula Rasa, I still get that same feeling of like kind of junkiness in it.
Yeah, I agree.
And like, again, these are games I like a great deal so far.
Yeah, for Hellgate, it's just like little things like when you kill some flying creature and it's dead floating in midair, that just, you notice that kind of thing because it obviously shouldn't be floating in the midair. Even the icons,
or
like in the, if you look at your skill tree, like there's something about the Blizzard design of icons that just makes you want to pick those skills.
I agree. The skill tree screen looks like placeholder art to me.
It really does.
Yeah, like it looks low res. I can't even see what the icons are that I'm looking at. I mean, yeah, it just feels like, are you not done? Are you kidding? This is the screen you put here?
When you play it in first-person perspective, the guns look like they all came out of Red Faction or something, where it's basically, like, say you're in wood shop in fourth grade, you know, and you start, like, gluing and nailing, like, blocks together until you say it's a gun, and it's basically a gun because there's something to hold, and then there's a kind of a, you agree that there's a barrel at one end. It's kind of like that, right?
Two wooden wedges coming to a point.
And then, of course, I don't know if it's more of a latency thing or not, but the animation is just like super slow-mo on a lot of things. Like when you kill someone and then when it goes into the ragdoll state, it's just this kind of floaty weird, or when you blow up a, like an explosive canister or like a crate and it just flies. Like I just shot a wood pallet and it splinters like it was a goddamn Death Star blowing up. You know, like there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to say that my first impression with Hellgate was quite good. And so my gut reaction, because it's gotten so much negative press and lots of people complaining online, was like, well, this is actually pretty fun. Like, I was surprised how much I was enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And my initial feeling of, well, I better check this thing out, became like, I really want to play this. And so my Saturday of, like, I'm going to boot this up and look at it turned into, like, I'm playing Hellgate all day.
Yeah.
I had the same reaction. I mean, I was playing single player, and I got to level 8, and I liked it enough that my boyfriend Keith was watching me, and we were both kind of like, you want to play this together? And we were like, yeah, I think I kind of do. So we went and bought another one.
Wow. Yeah. So you actually went to the store and bought another one after playing it.
After playing it.
Okay, so that's
I should have gave you, I could have gave you mine.
So, I mean, and in single player, I wasn't having any of the, like, technical issues that cropped up during multiplayer. Like, when we started doing multiplayer, like, it would be crashing more.
All
like,
of us. Right. Of course, you played the single player for a while until you realized.
How about
single player's a waste of time?
Well, yeah, then I realized that as soon as we started multiplayer.
Right.
How about this for when we, every time you turned the game off, was it because you crashed out? I mean, for me, I never turned it off. I always quit playing when it told me to quit playing by crashing.
I crashed a hell of a lot in multiplayer, and yeah, definitely we're going to
single player. I chose with when to stop.
Right,
like I hit like level 9 or so, and I'm like, and I was really tired, but I still like could have played more.
Yeah,
then I stopped on purpose, and I think that was the last time I stopped on purpose.
I mean,
for the other times, it was like, I think the last time we played, we hit like a terrible actually gameplay bug, which was more than just like it crashing. Like,
was this that boss bug?
Yeah, it was a boss that like double spawned and then like spawned.
Yeah, so tell people what happened.
Okay,
so
you go to the British same thing Museum. Happened to me. It's around level 8 or 9, I guess you're at. So I'm an evoker, he's a guardian, so basically mage and tank if you're gonna parse it to anything else. And we go into one of the story dungeons, I guess they're called, because there's tons of like little sewers you can go in where there's just quests to kill, you know.
Yeah.
10 alligators and get their fangs or whatever, but they're demon alligators. So we go to the museum.
They look shitty, too. They look like alligators. It's very
they're from hell.
Jim Henson-y hell, though.
Yeah.
That's okay with me. I like Jim Henson, though. That's a dark crystal.
Yeah,
right, exactly. Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, but then so you're in the museum. There's a part where you go into the Hell Gate, I guess it is, and then you come back out, and then you're supposed to escape from the museum because you just, spoiler alert, I guess, blew up this part of hell with a bomb of some sort, which I don't understand.
Right.
So, and then these statues that have been standing there start coming to life, I guess. I'm not entirely sure that's what's going on. But
I thought they came back through the Hell Gate, but okay.
No, they look like the statues, so I'm assuming they were popping to life.
Okay.
But then, like, too many of them spawned. Because I played this exact thing in single player, and I had no trouble at all.
Doesn't that Colonel or General come through? Colonel.
I think his name is Emerald Golkar.
Who is he?
Emerald Golkar or something. Okay. But I had multiple Emperor Golkars. Who cares what his name is? But I had multiple spawn. We had multiple copies of this boss.
Yeah.
And multiple copies of.
Why can't he just be called Chuck or something?
Steve.
Earl.
Emperor.
Al.
Chuck.
Mitch.
And then it was just impossible. Like, we respawned and came back to the dungeon like 10 times. And
yeah.
We couldn't put a dent in any of these things. And they'd just be like, they all got stuck and like were vibrating in the same room together. And you'd walk in and then they'd all turn to you and go, and then you die in 3 seconds. We're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. I had the same experience. I was banging on whatever his name was, Admiral, whatever. And I killed him. And then I still, like, from the back, I just like was like, taking damage, and I turned around, and there he was again. And I knew this wasn't like a boss fight where he respawned. This was actually a goof.
If this was how it's supposed to be, then they have some serious issues with this.
So you guys played this game, and you're encountered messed up boss bugs. You can't even understand what's going on with the story, and it crashed a lot.
Yep.
You bought a second.
Well, there's
copy
more than that.
Game.
Aside from that stuff,
this is all happened in the multiplayer.
For me,
right, the multiplayer.
Like,
wow.
I played. I'm like, okay, let's. I mean, that stuff's there, and it's annoying.
Uh-huh.
But like, looking beyond that, I'm at least trying to say, okay, imagine they patched all of this today.
Right,
tonight. That's in our heads too.
What is this game to me? And my issues with it are the randomized levels are bad, just flat out bad. And this is because as
they
going
need more
through,
of them.
As I'm going through the tile set, but they're already bad to me before I got to the point where I stopped seeing new tile sets, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So what would happen is I'm going through, Ryan's having a little drink there. I'm going through the level and I see the same tile, then here it is again, and there it is again. And then I started asking myself, like, did I accidentally turn around when I was fighting one of these creatures? Am I going back the way I came?
Yeah.
And then so, like, okay, I'll press on. It's a new enemy spawn, so I must go in the right way.
You know, at the end
of some long thing, It comes to just a dead end.
Right. But like Sean and I told you the other day, you know, just around the office, like that's exactly what the Diablo levels did too.
That doesn't make them good though. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Just because it occupies.
If Diablo did it, it must be right, Sean.
Because it occupies a special place in your rose-tinted memory does not mean.
Right. I mean, I recognize that it's
a dead
not
end
a particularly
a dead end.
Sophisticated way to design a level by any means.
Well, what if Call of Duty, you get to the end of one of the levels and it's a dead end. That's just it. And they're like.
I'll tell you what the streets in Hellgate reminded me of, because as you do run down the long streets, you start seeing the same thing over and over. It reminded me of the backgrounds in the Flintstones, like when they would be driving down the street.
Yeah, exactly, dude.
Yeah.
And you start seeing the same buildings over and over.
Yeah, totally.
You even notice that when you're like 5 years
down the hall and you see the same umbrella.
Right, even little kids notice that shit.
Yeah.
And so it does bother me because it gives the game – it doesn't have any kind of like charm or intensity to me. And it's just like, and those being the opposite ends, you know, the spectrum, or at least if it could be like super horrific. And it's kind of just like, these are boring. But then the other thing I think is what matters between Diablo and Hellgate is that with Diablo, since it was fairly simplistic visual representation, it worked fine with the gameplay, which is really rudimentary. But what happens now is that when you go and say, let's try to compete with the other, you know, visual tour de force games, and bring this game up to speed, put it in 3D and stuff, what it ends up doing is just underscoring how rudimentary the actual game systems are. So that the combat, you know, when you're fighting someone, like I was saying, it looks completely ridiculous when they fall down. It stands out to you that they're walking through objects, you know, that you're not using, that the objects that seem to be there in physical parts of the environment that you'd use for cover or just an obstruction, that those don't necessarily matter. And that the way that every enemy just rushes you, every enemy's tactic so far, I mean, I only got to level 8 or 9, is just to run directly at you. So if you're a marksman, which is the class I play, and I play it in first-person mode, all the gameplay consists of running backwards while holding your fire button down and shooting them.
Right.
You know?
Right. There are a few different enemy attacks, for sure. There's the dudes who are who kind of leap at you from out of the sky, and I mean, there's some different.
Yeah, jump and run.
They jump and run at you. Oh, jump on you, run on you.
Honestly, I don't know. I don't know why.
There wasn't
this.
A lot of. For at least for the bosses, I think. There wasn't a lot of different attacks. There's like
okay,
different,
yeah, there's
different
not.
Rates of movement. There was one guy at the beginning who spawned like lots of little. Worms or whatever, and they would chase you independently, and it's like, oh, okay, so at least he released four worms to come after me. But that was about the most interesting I can remember for all the other bosses. All the other, like, named guys were just like, I have a name, I'm bigger than
and
the other birds
big.
Of me, and I'm just going to come hit you.
Just right. Run right at you.
I've not found any reason to, like, switch my loadouts or whatever. I found that my one weapon does fine no matter what I'm killing. I've not had to change strategies.
I've never had to, but I find it entertaining to.
Yeah.
So with the marksman, like, for whatever, if I have one loadout bound to F3 key, and that would be a napalm rocket that's like an area of effect thing on the floor, and since you know everything's going to run at you, no matter what you do, you just shoot it at the ground in front of you as you back up, and they'll run through it, and it will, like, hurt them as they pass through it. And then as they're passing through it, you've already switched with your F key to another loadout. Uh-huh. And so maybe I have a pistol and a little grenade launcher, and I'll finish them off with that.
For the character I'm playing, it's very much like, which toy do I want to play with now? Because they all seem to work.
Right, but you're not doing it in reaction to what the game is challenging you.
Right, it's just like, this right now I want to use this instead of this. I was thinking, like, if... All of a sudden, Diablo 3 came out, and it was the same gameplay as Diablo. It was pretty much Hellgate, but even, like, even more polished.
Yeah.
I think I'd be disappointed, too. I would expect them to do
if this
the
was,
next gameplay step
I would
well.
Say that right. If this was Diablo 3, and it's funny because this is the Diablo 1 and 2 guys. Mm-hmm. If this was – if they called this Diablo 3, I would think that this, frankly, was a fucking catastrophe.
I think everyone would. Part of
probably
it's just
why they haven't done Diablo 3
the impossibility
yet.
Of living up to your, you know, your expectations
right.
there on that.
But it's beyond that. It is the technical stuff. You can't – I mean, yes, at some point they are going to patch this up and it'll be fine and these will all be distant memories. But some of the stuff is unbelievable how bad it is right now. Mm-hmm. And there's simply no excuse for it. I mean, I've gone through levels in multiplayer, you know, slog through some entire frickin', you know, street – mowed down every single person. I get to the portal I need to get to that, to the next part of the story, only to find out that the portal's not open.
Right.
Basically just because of a glitch. Mm-hmm. So I have to, you know, I have to log out of the game and log back in, and then I have to clear that whole goddamn thing again.
I think
you know?
You should play, I know Sean's been playing it, but I think you should play Tabula Rasa because it's almost the same game.
It really is.
Except with worlds that are designed for, you know, maximum variety with instances that are like very, you know, very well put together and have the variety with characters that you can basically re-roll anytime you want.
Okay, now there's another big problem that thank you for reminding me. The lack of a respec in this game is seriously, it's just unbelievable to me that they would make a mistake that bad. And I believe that they've said why.
Right.
So I can't believe that that reason is anything remotely intelligent.
What was
no
the,
offense.
What would be this reason that they've said?
Well, I don't want to put words into their mouth, so I'll have to go back and see it. But I can't think of any reason why you wouldn't allow
to replay their game over and over again.
Well, right. Sure. But any reason that would
reason
actually make any sense to a gamer.
Exactly.
Well, one issue I'm having is even like
it was a good
when, I looked, when I look down my tree, like even with Diablo, you could kind of like – go to the bottom and pick out, like, okay, that skill is something that I really want.
Right, right, right.
I'm looking at this tree, and it's, like, you know, got all sorts of branches, and I go down to the bottom of all of them, and I'm like, eh.
Yeah, they all look
them, and you get them, and they suck, and you're stuck with them.
Yeah.
Like, the grenade you get, you throw it, and instead of lobbing a grenade in a reasonable arc where so that you can, you know, intuit where it will land, so that way then you get used to dropping them in groups of enemies. It's like you shoot the thing like the goddamn Saturn rocket, and it just goes to the end of the map and blows up.
Right.
It won't stop when it hits anyone.
And you can't.
So it's entirely dumb and useless, and I hate it.
And you can't.
I hate it.
And you can't get out of it. You can't. I mean, charge me $1 million in, but let me respec. Let me get rid of that.
Charge
point.
Me a penny, dude.
Well, right.
Credits.
Let me call Cash Call and respec.
Whatever it is, give you another chance without having to completely re-roll your character.
Yeah.
Which is a joke.
Is there a way? Maybe I'm just missing it because I haven't been paying attention because the game isn't that difficult.
Yeah.
Is there any reason to use the different, like, elements, basically? Because I have, like, a fire gun, and I have a toxic gun, and I have a spectral gun.
Well, I haven't noticed that either. Yeah.
Maybe I'm not far enough. Maybe resistances are...
I suppose you'll get to the part where it becomes different. I mean, I'm sure you think the same. It'll get difficult enough at a point where then they really start to go for these, like, heterogeneous groupings of enemies.
Yeah.
And then you have to shift between your build-ups to know who you're hitting and when.
Yeah, the lack of information is another thing. I mean, I was complaining to you the other day about... You know, because I have a subscription, and so it's dropping like subscriber only items, which is another, you know, whatever. I don't have to go down that road of complaint. Yeah. But you know, so things are dropping in the world, like potatoes, things like that, apples. And it turns out that you use those things in recipes, right? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really tell you. There's not enough information. It doesn't tell you what an apple is. So, you know, so I got an apple and I ate it because you know it's an apple.
Maybe that's
but
it.
It didn't do anything for me. So then I learned later when I found some recipes that dropped, some subscriber-only recipes, that, one of the ingredients is apple. So, okay, so now I'm going to stop eating these apples that I didn't know what they did anyway. I'll put them in the recipe for this toffee thing I can make now.
Nice.
So then I eat the toffee thing, and I don't know what that does. What did I make a recipe for? Tell me. +2 health, whatever.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, it's just rudimentary information that the game lacks.
Crafting is always this opaque thing in games. Like, it was – well, not always, but it was an auto assault, and it was like – it wasn't implemented in Tabula Rasa when I was playing that in the beta. But it always seems like the one thing. And then even in when I played a Hellgate, you know, you just assume, well, at some point I'll have enough crap to make something that might be useful.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, crafting is always something that I think
WoW does crafting pretty well.
Make it clear.
It simplifies it and just kind of says, you will craft something that gives you 50 health. Yeah, great.
Uh-huh.
Perfect. Got it.
Right. Tell me what it does.
But then it doesn't have all these extra barriers where, like, once you get the items, it's like, oh, well, you need to get the crafting lesson from this guy at the crafting center. And then you go to the crafting center and you get this lesson.
There's
it's like,
trainers.
Well, you need to upgrade this crafting lesson that you got. And you're like, by that point, that's why I always give up in the few MMOs I play with the crafting. It's like, well, come on, dude. Fuck this shit. Give me some gratification right up front, you know?
Did you play Lord of the Rings Online?
A little bit. And I never got to the point where I was crafting.
It's exactly what you're describing.
Yeah, pretty much.
It would...
The crafting in that game would drive you insane.
Really?
Because it's exactly what you just described.
Yeah.
That sucks. That's dumb. I hate it.
And you couldn't get all the materials within your own profession.
Right.
For the recipes you needed in Lord of the Rings. So you would have to, like, get them from other players from and other, stuff. Yeah.
Like, there's farming. And you'll have to go, like, buy the seeds and crap. And you got to go find a field and then plant the seeds.
It better be some really harvest. Good stuff you get for this.
And then you get some onions. And then you have to do some stuff with the onions to make them into, like, edible onions. And then you got to, like, cook them.
Meanwhile, your life is ticking by.
Yeah, that's good. I could order Taco Bell in that time.
And I do agree with you about the randomization of the levels. I think it just kind of just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, when you compare it to a game that looks as great as something like Titan Quest, which is basically the exact same kind of game, but every single level is beautiful looking.
See, if you go to a dead end in Titan Quest, maybe you have this like vista where you're up on a hilltop and you look down at a valley below or something. There's at least some reward. It's not just like
a chest.
Well, right. It would yield like a big chest. You would know, okay, if I go to this out-of-the-way place, they're going to have something there for me.
Right. Titan Quest is not randomized, though, right?
No, it's not.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
people bitched about the fact that it wasn't randomized,
which made no sense to me.
Yeah, it's like I'm definitely now in the like make the
randomization is
camp.
Old. Like in Diablo, it was cool because you're like, oh, cool, random. So you could play this forever, and it was fine back then.
Back then,
900 years ago.
Uh huh. So and I think Sean's sort of right. The isometric perspective and the, you know, it lent itself to randomization more. I mean, here it does sort of point out the flaws. Mm-hmm.
And maybe there's some way you can come up with an algorithm that, like, mixes randomization with some design. But
yeah.
This isn't it.
It does really get, you know, as much as I liked the game at the beginning, and I really did, and I still like it. It's still on my hard disk.
I still want to play it.
Yeah, I still want to play it. I'm not going to uninstall it because I'm hoping that with the patches they'll fix stuff. But it does get to be a little wearing
to enter, you know, the next new zone, you know, the next new part of London, and have it look exactly the same as every other. It's yeah. like, oh my God, you guys needed to do something different.
To the point where you even know, like say in the London Tiles set, right, there's the broken building
yeah.
on the left side, and yep, you go down yep. there and there's like a burning trash can, but it's like just this pit that's always there. And sometimes yep. there's a zombie in there and sometimes there's not. It's like you see it over and over again, or yep. in one of the dungeon tile sets where there's this walkway that kind of goes up on the left. Like it's going to lead you to some other upstairs area, but it's just this platform that does, it's just nothing.
Yeah. Yep.
And that one over and over again. Like what is that? Yeah. What does
the,
that
the,
even?
The game needed a lot more work.
And games have proven that it's possible to create just a vast, rich amount of content that is specifically designed. Mm-hmm. You
know, yes. I mean,
World of Warcraft proves that. Everything, right. And there's nothing random in any of yeah. those dungeons.
Right.
I
mean, that's so true. They could have made.
Hand place rocks, for God's sake. So.
Right.
I think this, yeah, these sorts of games, I mean, I guess you're saying that World of Warcraft's an exception, but I mean, it's just the whole quantity over quality thing.
Right.
Like, let's find a way to give you, to keep you playing this game as long as you can. But the problem for me is that if the quality's not good enough to keep me playing, the quantity's never going to do it. Because some people, like you guys really do, I'm not saying you will with this game, mm-hmm. but I know some people are more interested in, you know, what I call collectomania or just mm-hmm. completism and getting every mm-hmm. little thing. And I find that stuff easy to, like, overlook. Mm-hmm. Like, it just doesn't grab me that way.
Mm-hmm. See, I do have that part of my personality. That
and
says
I do,
I
too.
To get shit.
Yeah, which is why it's still on my hard disk, and I'm hoping it will get better. Mm-hmm. I mean, I keep giving it the benefit of the doubt, but there's such annoying things about it, and it's just really disappointment, this release.
I wonder. It kind of goes with your personalities, too. I mean, do you guys hoard stuff? Because it's like, now and then I'll collect one sort of thing or another. But for the most part, my whole life, I've moved all the time. Mm-hmm. So I get rid of stuff. Like, I don't have any. Like, I mean, if I had kept everything, I'd have every console in existence, you know, from, you know, Vectrex and to various, you know, Atari versions and Intellivisions and so on and so forth. I don't have any of that. I have about, like, 10 console games at any point ever in my collection. Oh, and it's like, I just. If I'm done, I'm done. I move on.
I'm a hoarder.
Get something else, you know.
I've got all my records going back for forever. CDs, books. It was comic books for a while.
How do you manage to keep all of your books? Do you have a big house? Or do you sleep underneath?
No, I have a fairly big house, but like we have bookcases like in our bathroom, literally, because we have so many books,
yeah.
my wife and I.
Yeah.
That's another thing.
My bonus operandi is buy a new bookshelf.
Yeah. I just constantly cycle books in the same way I would console games, you know, where you can go to like a store and trade them in. Mm-hmm. It's like we got Pegasus and Berkeley, right? So
right.
Read 5 books and then take those in.
We will do a purge of the house every couple of years and go down to a used bookstore and sell them or to the library and donate them. Mm. But for the most part, I keep them all.
What about just dumb random craps? Like all the stuff you get sent for games, like little... little pewter statues and stuff. You got those all over.
No.
I'm basically asking if
at home,
house
I'd
looks
be divorced.
Like your office.
No, I wouldn't be married to if I took that shit home.
It's all stuff I choose to keep.
Yeah.
I have 14 consoles hooked up to my TV right now.
Are you serious?
14?
Yes.
All hooked up at
wow.
the same time?
How do you do that?
There's a couple that are probably just like sitting in the...
Wait, they're actually hooked up?
Yes.
What, do you have some like gigantic splitter box or what?
I have two. I have two splitter boxes.
You've got to take a photo of this and put it online. Can you do that?
I probably could, yeah.
Wow.
So what are they?
Yeah.
How often do you play any given one of those 14?
This is why you haven't played Diablo on PC,
I play, you know, the Wii and the 360, you know, regularly.
Yeah, we know those consoles.
But you
yes.
haven't played the only PC game you've played in the past 3 months is Sam and Max Episode.
Yeah, that's not true.
Why do you need 14 consoles hooked up?
Well, what are some of the other consoles?
I played World of Warcraft.
And you got a GameTap. You can emulate any of those.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's what the
Valve's
Xbox
GameTap.
Is for.
That's why I like that kind of. The GameTap's perfect for me because it's like, now it sounds like I'm shilling for them, but I mean, the concept of that kind of downloadable content that you. Mm-hmm. Delete and return to your hard drive when you want. It's perfect because I don't have to have my living room look like a fucking Radio Shack. Like Ryan's.
I also have a huge bookshelf that's absolutely full of RPG books.
Really?
That I've had, you know.
Okay, so wait, what are some of these other consoles like now currently hooked up to your TV?
Do you have the Odyssey hooked up?
All right. I have the NES, the Super NES, Nintendo 64, GameCube, Wii. That's 5.
All right.
I got the Genesis, the Sega CD, the Dreamcast.
No Master System?
These are all
I don't have
up.
I will get a Master System at some point, but I do not have a Master
No 32X?
System. No 32X.
That's okay, good for you.
Jaguar?
No.
3DO?
No.
Turbo graphics? Derailing.
Jesse, derailing, do you talk to your girlfriend at home? Or are you just, is she just like, Ryan?
She plays.
Does she play too? Is she a gamer?
She tries a little bit.
Oh. So how else is she going to talk to you?
She likes Mario Kart, you know.
Oh, okay. As long as you have Mario Kart.
Like she has like a Game Boy. But, okay, wait. All right, so let's see. So,
we're not going to keep track of
Genesis,
all these.
Hold on, shut up. Genesis, Sega CD.
Oh, we got the OCD guy to start list them all off now.
I
got to
start again.
Atari 2600, Intellivision, Xbox 360, PS2, and then I added PS1. I don't think the PS1's hooked up, though.
You got to take a picture for us.
And then I have every iteration of the Game Boy.
And then you PSP. Have the games for all these, too?
Yeah.
You kept them all?
Uh-huh. Probably have about 60 to 70 NES games.
So you have that first Game Boy that kind of looks like the first cell phones?
Yeah.
That, like, giant thing
from
World
yeah.
War One.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And I have two Atari Lynxes, which were given to me by someone who didn't want them anymore.
And why do you need two?
I bet those were stolen.
Because he had two.
You could sell one. You could...
I lost two Atari Lynx.
So, you interested in an Atari Lynx, huh. John? So
go. The moral of the story is you need to be playing Hellgate.
Yeah.
They got the apples and potatoes you're craving.
Yeah, or else just go join Retronauts forever. Fucking console.
Yeah, dude, there's something about this I don't like.
Yeah.
Two-timing us.
Well, it's like, I mean, you've seen, did you see that blog post I made way back when I took a picture of all like my Sierra and LucasArts?
Yes.
Or all my Sierra games, rather?
Yes.
It's, you know, it's like the living room is the console version of that.
Yeah. And you are the adventure game god, it's true.
Awesome.
Well, let's not say god, let's say dweeb.
You already, no take backs. You said it.
Ryan's comic collection's probably
He's
a sight
to put that
to
on the back
too.
Of his box.
No, my comic collection, I've got like four long boxes.
Oh, I've got five. I beat you.
Yeah. Might have some short boxes, too. Oh, this doesn't count all the graphic novels that are on my other bookshelf.
Mine don't have the graphic novels in them.
Oh. Well, I have a whole
I don't
bookshelf.
I'm bragging. I'm a bigger loser. Ha ha.
Weren't you trying to get rid of these, like, a couple months ago?
I was. I almost sold them all.
Why don't you just get rid of them? Like, every time I'd move. Like,
I had
I'd
them up on Craigslist, and
the boxes,
I took them off.
Like, out in the apartments or in the neighborhood. And
I've thought of that with, like, the shitty ones that I'm embarrassed I bought. But didn't I tell
even
the story
more
on this podcast?
If you take that shit into a store, and you come into a comic store, and you're like, hey, I want to trade these in. And then they're like, looking through them, they're like,
yeah, we don't want this.
We don't want this. Or they're like, we can give you $2. And then, like, it even gets worse when you sit there and haggle with them. Oh, come on, man. Can't you make that three? Can't you make that $3.50? You got, like, you know, 8 years worth of books, 600 pounds a box.
That's like when I sold my old, like, Chicago and Styx records and shit like that. Yeah. Like, yeah, we'll give you $2 for this.
Yeah, at that
shit.
Point, you're
Learn
selling part
it. With it, man.
Right.
Let it go, dude. You'll live you live a freer, happier life without that shit.
Without your clutter.
Yeah.
All right.
Talk about my dirt. So what?
We have more games.
We got plenty more games.
Holy shit. What the hell?
Let's
can't take a break. We already took one.
Let me talk about Crysis a little bit right now then. And I know you played The Witcher, but I want to talk about Crysis because obviously the review just came out today.
Okay. How you doing there, Sean? You made a cringe face.
I'm just looking at the time.
Okay. Yeah, we do have a magazine to put out.
Yeah, but
we have to talk about
Crysis.
Important.
We have Crysis and Witcher. And is that it? I think we...
Oh.
And we're good to go.
Let's see what happens after that. Yeah.
Okay, so tell us about Crysis, Thorne.
The review just went up today on that.
I hear you hated it.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Why'd you only give it an 8?
Oh,
why'd you score it so low? God.
You know, today, coming like before, when I was looking online before we came in here, I was seriously thinking to myself. And then Robert Ashley, who, you know, is on the show sometimes, a.k.a. Bob Ito, Max Chill, was reminding me that he doesn't write reviews, and part for this sort of reason. It's like it's not worth your time, you know. But it's one of those things where I'm looking at it, and now and then, you know, what did I say earlier to Ryan? Okay, Mr. Rogers at least knew that his audience was in diapers, right? So he would know. He would do what he did in that knowledge. But for me now and then, you know, it's like I want to do something different, and then – it's like I find out that the audience is in diapers.
You just have to remember.
And I'm not saying everyone. This isn't like, again, like don't even let this be like everyone sucks, and because then it would be me. But I'm talking about specific people. The kind who posted like the story at Voodoo Extreme or whatever, that the headline was, 1UP gets sloppy seconds, and then the sloppy seconds is hyperlinked to some other review that must have come out a few hours earlier or something. 8 out of 10, why so low? I mean, fuck you, dude. Hey, whoever wrote that, seriously, fuck you.
Yeah.
You're a piece of shit. Because if you, and, I mean, that's, no, I'm dead serious. You are a
piece of
shit.
I know you're serious.
Shit.
I agree with
that,
you.
Yep. You can eat a dick. Because wow. Here's why. And it makes me so upset. Because for me, when I put an 8 on a score, I'm very seriously saying this is a damn fine game. And I believe that you should play it. And part of the reason is, of course, everyone uses different scales. We talked about it before, so I won't try to, like, retell that entire story. But in my mind, and I can only speak for myself, I want to use the entire scale. That means 1 through 10, and every mm-hmm. single one of those is a viable option, not this blurry area where 6 and 7 are the same, or 8 and 9 are the same, or mm-hmm. 2 and 5 are more or less the same, mm-hmm. or any kind of world where an 8 is low.
Yep. Right.
And the other part of this that is so frustrating to me is that, again, people see the score, the first thing they look at, the only thing they want to argue about, and it changes the way that they interpret every other bit of information in the review. Whereas we want to say, well, we can't have our way, apparently, especially online. I mean, I'm sure for GFW magazine readers, I love you. You guys clearly get it in the mail we get from you guys and stuff. But it's like, here's a review and here's a score to go with it as a little additional piece of, like, you know, think about it this way. You know, if we had to put a score on it, here's the score. Mm-hmm. And so they conduct this sort of linguistic, you know, sentence calculus or arithmetic where they say the assumption is any game that's been hyped throughout the year to any, you know, significant degree of which Crysis has won, games like Oblivion, games like Gears of War, you know, the games that we get all excited about and talk about, the assumption is that they should all get a 10. And that means then that any negative thing you say in your review must be one of the reasons, must be where you can isolate where the points are missing. So say, for example, if it's an 8 that the game, you dock 2 points off it for something, and we can find these by finding the negative things. So if you then said 2 negative things in your entire review, that must mean that each of those is responsible for removing a single point from
Makes
the
sense.
Score of 10 that it deserved.
I'm with that.
Now, and that's why you're
Oh,
an
wait,
idiot.
You're saying that's not how it should be. Okay.
I mean, this is just completely
Shit, I missed
absurd.
The whole point.
I mean, it's just like this rotten, absolutely faulty thinking, and it doesn't work that way, right? I mean, it's not like every good thing you say. I mean, it doesn't even make sense no matter how you try to slice it.
Right.
So that's dead wrong. And some of the frustrating things that's led to is someone's like, I commented that, you know, the dialogue and narrative, especially toward the end of the game when they figure more prominently in the story, are bad. But so people said, oh, he docked a point because the dialogue's bad. This piece of shit doesn't understand that a game doesn't have to have a story to be good. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, my bad. I thought I was saying that the beginning of the game had, like, fuck all for a story and was absolutely phenomenal.
Right.
And then when it gets to the point where it tries to shoehorn a story in and it screws up the gameplay, it starts to suck. You know, mm-hmm. Any other number of things. Then you know, I shouldn't even read it. I should not read it because among the other comments that were read, Ryan or some other person at 1UP decided to make, because I didn't write it, they decided to make my reviewer biography paint a pretty picture of me. And it lists like all my favorite games as Naruto. So like every game that I like it's got Naruto in the title.
But that's because you didn't turn your text in, so we had to write it for you.
And people are like online, dude, this is the worst review since Neverwinter Nights 2. It has to be pulled. It's got to be pulled down.
What, because it says you like Naruto games?
Yeah, and they're like, dude, this guy, he should not touch an FPS. He just,
wow.
He just
wow.
likes Naruto
that's,
games.
That's
and then, of
awesome.
Course, everything else. He's, you know, this and that and other things that aren't polite to say. And, I mean, it's just mind-blowing. I mean, I can't expect – that's our fault. You put a joke there. I don't know. That's why I don't think you guys should have done that.
No,
but it's like,
I disagree with you. If people couldn't read that from you and see that was a joke, then they're morons.
Right. You should not be worrying about these people.
And then the other things that happen,
no sleep,
it's like, that's the main thing, an 8. And you see all these people posting like, oh, I'll still play it. I'll still try it. And I'm like,
even though it got the measly 8.
Yeah. Seriously, oh my God. I wrote the 8th saying like, you should play this game. If you're even interested in a first-person shooter, and again, I said also in
your
the
game,
show
the review was unequivocally positive. I read this review.
And then and
it's
then
unequivocally
it's, and I
a
set
positive
up the context
review.
So that the whole point with the review is, you know, I used one of Chavat Yearly, CEO of Crytek's, metaphors for his game to, mm-hmm. to create a theme for the story. And then by doing that, what I wanted to do was establish how the game was working, establish, you know, all the things that it's supposed to be and what it by and large is. And then when you have this framework, when you get to point, instead of saying the AI is great, but sometimes it's not or whatever, and then just getting here's the graphics, here's the audio, like that when you get to the part where things aren't necessarily impressive to me, it's now situated in this context of like, here's all the things that are going right and the ways that it's going right. And so and now it's like doubly upsetting when these things happen,
right.
You know?
Right.
And that, here's basically the thing with the game. Some of the stuff in the beginning, you know, the majority of the game, the first three quarters of the game is just incredible. And I've said that before in the one-off show. I've said that if you'd like FPS, it's a no-brainer. Go and get it, provided you have the system to play it. And it'll make you look. I mean, I've mentioned how it's made me look at COD differently. Mm-hmm. It'll make you look at all the other shooters you play differently. You'll at least want to say, well, how did Crysis handle that or whatever? You know, and they've shown you what option that there are more options out there for designers mm-hmm. than a lot of people acknowledge, you know. And then so because of it, and it establishes all the stuff, and it's as you're playing, you're becoming more and more comfortable with the way that the game works, and you're experimenting and you're having more fun. And then all of a sudden it gets to this point where, and it wasn't just that it becomes linear where it had been, you know, systemic, procedural, wide open, where it just becomes scripted and narrow and all this stuff. That was a shock, which it was, but it became, it's also specifically that it's poor scripting. Mm-hmm. It's not like COD4 quality mm-hmm. linear stuff. It's just mm-hmm. like kind of lousy, mm-hmm. you know, like what I was talking about for the beginning of Area 51, mm-hmm. you know? And why it was so frustrating to me is because you could still see the potential. And then, you know, here's some spoilers in this, but after you do just these, all these phenomenal things where you're fighting helicopters, you're hiding from them, they're falling through the trees, you're running and getting in a boat, crossing a lake, sniping someone, getting in a tank. Then, you know, you have these situations where you're escorting someone. If he dies, you die. Then you get in a Jeep. You can't switch positions or anything. It's like you just have to go down this exact same path, shoot the guys that come out in the exact same spots again. Area 51, the old game in the bar that Ryan frequents, and I threw that in it. And then you're looking at it, you know, there's a flight section, and you have to fly, and you kill X number of enemies, and the invisible wall kind of vanishes, and you get to move forward, and you're looking at it, and you're like, the plane sucks, but I want to land. What if I land? I mean, everything still looks great down there. What if I just take a truck instead, mm-hmm. A final battle on an aircraft carrier instead of standing there? Now, here's the spoiler thing, where the end of the game...
Ah, are you telling the end of the game?
Yeah, I think I should do it.
Oh, man.
Okay, maybe not. I'm going to have to do... But the thing is you're not going to want me to ever talk about it again, so it's like
no,
I do
no,
it now.
No, what do you
I
mean? Don't. Sure, you will talk about it again.
Okay.
We'll be talking about Crysis for weeks.
Because there's so much that goes wrong there at the end, in my opinion. And so it's not just that it violates the expectations, but you can... Everything that's happening, you can still see, well, what if they did it along the way that... So you... Mm-hmm. If they maintained the approach that they had established, it would still work.
So you feel they broke the expectations that they set
up. They still could have told the story. They mm-hmm. could have like basically ramped up the game and made it better and better and better until the point where it ended. Uh-huh. It would have been like, oh my God, when you put it down, I cannot wait for these guys to make another game. This is uh-huh. freaking brilliant. Mm-hmm. So instead, I feel those I have that emotion at many points in the beginning of the game and the midpoint of the game, and at the end when it's done, because you know, and I now I'm kind of shackled. I can't say specifically what, thanks to you. when it ends, I'm like, good God, that's like from what highs to what lows, you mm-hmm. know. And it's the ending of anything is really important. You can't entirely dismiss it. So one you know another simile, and I'm so fond of using these, would be, you know, you look at this perfect. You know, just mind-boggling Olympic performance. This gymnast or something mm-hmm. just blows you away. Then at the end, like the motherfucker face plants mm-hmm. on the dismount. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it doesn't matter how the other stuff is still good and everyone's going to talk about your performance, but they're mm-hmm. also going to talk about the fact that you ate shit on the dismount, you know? And you will always look at it as this big thing. You know, you can't just break it up and say, dude, that was good until you broke your face. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was good and you broke your face.
Right.
But I mean, so I'm not supposed to talk about that, you know? and again, some people clearly aren't going to react so strongly mm-hmm. to this part of the game.
So is that one of the two things that brought it down
that's
to an eight?
That's one of the two things, yeah. That's the other point, thing other would point, be...
We were kidding. We were kidding. That was a joke.
I really think, though, a lot of it was scaled back. I mean, I'd also... I did not write in the way that, like, I'm going to review this game based on what I expect it to be.
Right.
But I just was also in a position... I mean, I had to think about that and make sure I wasn't doing that because I also know a lot of things were cut from the game.
Mm-hmm.
There were, you know, all these plans for frozen oceans and aliens that are shooting the ice out from beneath you so that you fall in or... You're using cover, they're freezing it and shattering it, leaving you exposed. None of these things are in the game. They just didn't make it in. You know, these big giant hunters grabbing tanks and throwing them when you're in them, all this kind of stuff like that. They didn't do it. And there could be any number of reasons for it, but I think that if those things were there, if it was a matter of time, if it was a matter of assuming that more people had hardware that would meet the minimum system requirements to enable that sort of stuff, I mean, whatever it would be, I do think that it would have been cool to see that. And,
well, let me ask you something to just sort of put you on the spot for just 1 minute.
Yeah.
You have been pretty close to this game, and you know you've previewed it before. You've talked to Shavat. There's a lot here that you've been up on this game.
Yeah, totally.
And so, do you think that someone who came to this game like completely fresh?
Mm-hmm.
Might have reacted differently to, you know, maybe the ending at that point to them would have been overwhelmed by all the stuff that came before it enough to make them go like, oh my God, it's an 11. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, is it possible that your expectations were so high that it became a disappointment?
It's hard to say. Well, I really don't believe that it's because my expectations were so high, but I mean, expectations established in the course of playing the game for review.
Uh-huh.
So again, like not everyone, I mean, some people just will not care. Some people are extremely happy with just about anything. I mean, you constantly, you'll see people arguing to death that like just pick any random game, you know, is the best thing ever, you know, and it was entirely without fault. But I think if people are critical, you know, to some extent, I believe that this is going to be a thing that's repeated. I think you're going to see a lot of people talking about how, yeah, this is, I think I even said it in the review, I do believe that all conversations about the game will come to the point where they say, well, yeah, well, what about the end? How did you feel about it?
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe there'll be room for disagreement there, but a lot of people, just maybe more so than you know, go the other direction, will say that, yeah, it was disappointing. And that's just based on if you knew nothing about the game, if you plugged it in, you're like, this is crazy. This is totally ramping up to something. And then it's kind of like, it just really comes out of nowhere. So much so that it really felt as though it were the work of two different design teams or one team that was like really good with doing the systemic open stuff and then really not so good at doing the other, you know, the other thing, doing the scripted work. And I don't know. I think that over time, I think people are so reactionary right now. And it's just the usual. I mean, for whatever inexplicable reason, people think that they've been told all year that this game is going to be the greatest thing ever.
Yep,
and then somehow you get to this like fucked up mentality, this absolutely just like clinically insane mentality where you're like, why so low?
Yeah, that's crazy.
For a game that you haven't played or plus, just started playing.
These people who are reacting they haven't finished it.
There was
even started
in many cases.
Right. But the assumption that this thing was destined to get a 9 or a 10.
Right. There was this dude who commented in the same kind of comment area that, well, we've been told by previews even as recent as a month ago that this game was going to shatter expectations or whatever, and now you're telling me otherwise. What's wrong with you? And he was saying it in all seriousness.
Yeah, and there's other very just as equally serious posts that said, well, website X gave it a 9.5. Website, you know, Y gave it a 9. Why? What's so? Why is yours so wrong? Why isn't yours the same?
That's just idiots.
They're very angry.
System wars mentality.
Why are you reading multiple reviews then when you want them all to say the same?
Right. All they want is their opinion to be validated.
This is why you got to stop reading the internet.
I do have to do it, and I think again because it is mainly kids because not so. I mean, who?
Well, kids, I'm not saying it's going to happen in this case, but we do often hear from publishers or developers, whoever, and again, I'm not saying it's the case in this case yet anyway, that we will get the call.
Oh,
it's
like,
at website, blah, gave it a 9, and this magazine gave it a 9. How come you did the – you're way lower than the Metacritic score.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's because we're actually a different publication.
Right.
Guess what? But
another point about the game, the thing with multiplayer, I didn't include a discussion of multiplayer with the review. Part of this is it's kind of a joint thing. It's like I wrote the review for our magazine, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. And then 1UP takes it and puts it online. I noticed it also referred to a caption where I talk about the nanosuit powers and stuff like that, and that didn't appear there. But here's the deal. The beta has been publicly available for a while, and that had one level on it. And aside from that, EA, I mean, they did, you know, everything they could. They said, like, here, we're going to have multiplayer sessions. At first, we were going to have one. Then it was, like, two, and then they arranged for a third one. And these were, you know, an hour and a half to two-hour sessions on three different days. And the problem for me is that I just knew that every time the multiplayer was going to be discussed in a review, it was just going to be descriptive. And now I feel vindicated because I went and looked and I found nothing but descriptive.
Sure.
You know, here's what power struggle is. And I'm like, well, that's what I did in the feature I did where we talked about power struggle.
No one's actually evaluating yet because they can't.
Because they can't. And they don't like, I mean, you have to play, it takes more than a few sessions with this. And so while I have all these hunches and things that I was reacting to when I was playing in these sessions, and one example would be that a few maps are designed to support, you know, air combat with VTOLs and jets and stuff. And in order to do that with the map, you have to make it very big because they move so quickly and they turn so wide and stuff like that. So in the early phases of the game, and I talk about phases because unlike Battlefield where the vehicles are there when the map starts and everyone races for them and gets in them, creating the downside that people often kill each other to get them. Because they really want them, or they just sit there and wait instead of doing something productive.
Right.
So Crytek said, you know, design logic said, let's find some way to stop people from doing this horseshit. It's counterproductive to the game, and what we're going to do then is make it so you buy your own vehicle, and then only you can use it until you've been in it once, and then it kind of unlocks so someone else can use it. You have to buy something, you have to get the prestige points in order to do it, and to get the prestige points, you have to play for a while. So at the beginning phases of these very large maps, I found that you're getting in a vehicle, like there are freebie Jeeps that are there. They have no guns on them or anything. And you're driving and driving and driving to one of the many distant capture points. And, you know, they go by different names. They're, you know, weapons factories and energy sources, prototype energy sources. It's just kind of like, okay, I'm driving. You get there. Maybe you get in one firefight. You kill one guy, but he had someone with him. And by the time you killed the first one, the second guy killed you. Spawn again, do it. You're kind of getting a little bit of stuff, but then you're like, all right, this time I'm going to get this rifle and a grenade so that when I run into two guys, I'm like more likely to win, you know? Mm-hmm. And then it happens. It could happen. It could work. And so if it goes one way, then you'll get a little more experience and you're continuing to do this. And I didn't find it very fulfilling, you know? Mm-hmm. And then if it went bad, it was really bad because it was like, then you only had enough to buy a pistol. So you're driving the same route again. You can mix it up, but you're just driving another distance. And then the worst case scenario, no one's there because people are just all over. You meet someone. It's very sleepy pacing. And then finally, when it does ramp up and the game could take, you know, like one of the matches took like almost 2 hours. Then at the end, you've got jets and stuff and you're able to get around or if you have enough money. So I found that annoying, but it's like, I don't want to just jump on that yet because I could play it for another week and say, oh, you know, I was missing something. There's some other factors where we really do end up sort of congregating in one area and the action does stay intense through all these phases. And, you know, now that I've been playing it for a long enough time, I do appreciate the solution. And I think it actually is maybe superior to the Battlefield scenario or whatever, but, you know, and I don't see anyone talking about anything like this. Like I just see the, and I can't complain what they're talking about when I'm not talking about anything in mind. But it's like, I just wanted to wait until I could, until I felt I can give you an evaluation of this and not just a description. Mm-hmm. And then this, when you just have a description there and then you have your score, then you have the 10 that these guys want so bad. Then you're like, oh, that's a description of a 10 multiplayer game right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Sean, we may not get the Crysis 2 exclusive scoop now, thanks to you.
Yeah, let's hope. I think Chavat and them are good people. I mean, hopefully nothing happens like that. But we know that there are circumstances in this business where you say a negative thing about something. Sometimes
you're out.
On a message board.
Yep.
One negative thing in a sea of positive things.
And you are out.
They fucking hate you.
Yep, you get the angry call from the CEO of the company to somebody over here at Ziff Davis, and then the next thing you know, everybody's in trouble.
It's so not worth it. I could see for so many people, it's like... just give these games the 9s and 10s and make everyone happy. Uh-huh. Make the publishers happy.
Yep.
Make the kids online
Why
happy.
Don't we do that? Why do we have to hate, Sean?
It would be so much easier to do that.
All right, that's my new mandate, guys.
9s and 10s only?
9s and 10s.
For everything?
Well, actually, if they're smaller publishers that don't advertise with us, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. If they're big ones that want to give us money, 9s and 10s.
So 5s for everyone else. Otherwise, using a 9 to 10 scale.
Right.
I'm good with that.
5s for everything unless they advertise with us. And then depending on, like, if it's like a half-page ad, they get a 6.
It's not even that. It's just straight. That's too – it's just a 9 or a 10. Just
oh, you're right.
And
just
you're
9s
safe.
And 10s.
Yeah, because the 9
Why piss anyone
attract
off?
Them to advertise.
Oh, you're right. These guys love games. And if we give them our game to review, they're going to love it. And we may sell more. You're right. Why didn't I think of this before? 9s and 10s. Next issue.
Everything.
Look for it. Engage.
It's sad, though, because, I mean, to be serious, you do. You're like, hey, I'm going to be fair to myself. And I'm just, I mean, this is, I'm going to be honest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, both COD and Crisis are awesome-ass games. I love them. They're both great.
Yep. Yep.
But, I mean, they got some issues with them.
Yep.
And they're significant to me. I mean, they're not, neither is the best game I've ever played. My life.
Ryan and I were in line for lunch wondering, like, do other entertainment industries that, you know, review things have this problem?
I bet they do.
Yeah, I wonder.
I know the music industry does from people I've talked to that work that work in video
with,
music magazines.
With records?
With record reviews and stuff, yeah.
Really?
The same sort of
How
thing.
How come the new Britney only got 2 out of 10?
Right.
Kind of thing.
So yeah. That means you can't interview.
Entertainment Weekly gave us a 4.
Do you think a studio publicist calls up Roger Ebert and goes, like, why do you only give this movie 2 stars?
He gives thumbs.
Or what? Doesn't he get stars on his website?
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, he gives
does.
Stars,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, well, they probably do, right? And that's why they all love Harry Knowles.
Oh,
right?
God.
Because he
yeah.
loves everything.
Okay. There's right. That's a good point.
That's another 10. Here you go, Harry. Here's your free bowl of chili.
Thank you. I love that movie.
I prefer Bush's baked beans.
Anything you say, Mr. Knoll. Thank you for loving King Kong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep playing now that it's out and there are other people to play in a natural environment and that aren't all EA testers who've been playing the game various iterations for the past 6 months. And. Mm-hmm. Just rip you up and see what I think about it, you know? And hopefully I'll have something worthwhile to say. So
if you like one more thing, then we can give it a 9.
We definitely
yeah,
can.
You got to
we can go back
positive.
Up a point.
That was part of the thing. That was kind of controversial is that the review someone put on there in the bottom, I'm passing the buck again, but like that it will not change the score. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's kind of hard. It was because it's like, I mean, we do have to put out the score. And it's like, my sense, this is my gut. Like, from all the time I played, this is the score the game gets with it.
Right.
But I mean, maybe it'll have to break precedent if, like, I play this thing for 40 hours straight. And then Ryan's looking at me like, dude, why are you saying this? I'm just saying hypothetically, you know, I mean.
Scores suck.
I hate numbers.
I wasn't the one who mandated that note.
Right.
I wish we could go back to that one mini revolution we had where we took the scores off everything.
I just sick great. Of doing reviews, man. I need just to do something else.
Oh, no, you're doing like 3 next issue.
It's just not worth it. It's like.
Can we just start like assigning random pictures as scores? Like, this is a carrot.
Hey,
this
you know what?
That's a great idea.
Carrot. This is a buttered
Wait, they
carrot.
Gave us a carrot. Is that good?
I want to know. I would like vegetable. To talk Maybe. About review games on podcasts with no scores. You know, just say everything you want. Don't have to worry about.
Hey,
all
that
the...
may that may be in our future.
But then we don't have to give it a number.
We just
or
talk
we
about
may
our
very vegetables. Well have a reviews podcast.
I really like Sean's idea. A random object in the world. And we never explain the system.
Hey, but
and
you're,
it's not
you
just
know,
fruits and vegetables. It's like everything.
Yeah. You and I are now the only ones who have work systems that are capable
that game
of
got
playing
a chicken.
Games.
This
yeah,
is true.
Yeah. Ooh. We're the only ones who can review games now.
Excellent. Well, you guys do that. Well, Sean and I will fuck off all day.
That's right.
I'll have to pass mine over. I'm done with reviews after this.
No, you're not.
I hate it.
Don't let them get you down, man.
Why so low?
Fight the good
Why
fight.
So
Sloppy
low.
Seconds. Why so low?
Why so low?
Why so low, Sean?
Yeah,
that's
dude.
Your new motto.
If I see that guy, I have to find his name. If you ever see me at an event, come introduce yourself, dude.
Sean, why so low, Elliot?
Why so low, man?
Hellgate London is, you know that little dog figure in Monopoly?
Yeah.
That's what that is. That's what I score it.
You didn't give it the race car? That's fucked up. All the other magazines gave it a race car. And that one website gave it the banker. Man, you suck. Little dog. Right. Jeez.
So how is Der Witcher?
Der Witcher. Okay, I'm going to talk about Der Witcher.
Please talk about it in accent the entire time.
And then we'll go back to our desks. You know, it's based on a series of novels by a Polish author, and I was going to do the right smart thing and bring in the name of the author, but I forgot. So we'll call him Kielbasa.
Oh, God.
Kielbasa von Krapsky. How's that?
That works.
That's perfect.
Does that work?
And okay, it depends on no one. That's the best part about that.
Okay, the Witcher is a RPG based on the novels by Kielbasa von Krapsky. actually, I'm enjoying it a lot. Quite a lot. I'm ending the first act of 5, so I have a long way to go. So take it all with a grain of salt. As with Sean, it may turn out that the last act is crud, and I'm going to change my whole opinion, but it is getting off to a great start here. Early on, I can say if it keeps up at this pace, I don't know how many other RPGs actually came out in 2007, but looking like RPG of the year so far at this stage, because to me, everything is working completely about this game. The setting, the dialogue, the combat system is fantastic. The game that this most resembles to me is Oblivion. But in the short run, again, I'm going to have to disqualify everything I say here based on the amount of time I put into it. But I'm really digging the combat a lot in a way I could never get over a hump with in Oblivion. All the time I played Oblivion.
Speaking of getting over a hump, you had your first hump in it last night.
Speaking of humping.
You did, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I had sex in The Witcher last night. Yep. Yeah, you had the option. You know, there's a dialogue tree comes up. Basically, you've like done all this stuff with this pretty hot-looking witch. And not witch. She's like a sorcerer.
So you better not have like chicken
By
legs,
the way,
right?
Witcher doesn't mean like you're a witch or whatever. It's like you're a monster killer. What? She doesn't have what?
Like chicken legs and like you like
No, she was hot.
Baba Yaga type
she
stuff.
She is like the witchest.
No, she was voluptuous.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't mean like – I mean literal chicken legs.
No. Oh, God. Well, you know, I don't know. I mean,
well, you know those demon chicks. Sometimes
well,
she had
a robe on.
Those kids draw them, and they got like you know big titties, but then they got like a
I don't know. She had her robe
like
on,
like a hoof. They got a horse hoof or something.
Well, if you say yes, I would like to, because she offers you, which is great. You didn't have to do any of the work as the guy. I didn't have to like beg her or anything, or offer to take her to the movies and dinner
you're the
first.
Freaking Witcher.
Yeah, because you're the Witcher.
Did she give you a card? Is that still in the?
I did get a card, but she. It's not a naked card.
Oh.
I know.
And that's the difference in the U.S. version, right?
Right. In the European version, you get like a playing card if you successfully bed a woman. Mm-hmm. And that card, I guess, in the European version is like a naked card.
Yeah.
But here she has like the bedspread, you know, covering her up. She's like holding the bedspread up. But then for like half a second, I thought it was going to be one of those like cards you get that like if you turn it a different
motion.
Angle it, like she's naked, so I was hoping it was going to turn
it, or something.
I'm like turning my head sideways
you,
on the monitor
like
seeing if I could
with the mouse.
I did, yeah. I turned my head sideways and then
That's
my
so
wife
ridiculous.
Walked in. What are you doing?
Did your
that.
Wife watch you play? Like, were you looking over your shoulder when you were humping in the game?
No, because they don't show you humping. Oh. It's just not like a sex game. They, all that happens is like there's a dialogue. It's like you've done this quest and you're like, I better get back on the road. I got more monsters to kill. And she's like, you sure you wouldn't want to stay the night? And then the choice, you get a, like one or two choice. And one is like, you know, you bet, baby. And number two is like, I really got to go kill more monsters. So, you know, so I'm like, nah, what the hell? So I said, yeah. And then it just goes to a cutscene. And the cutscene is actually oddly, well, you see like the feet, you see she giggles and their feet are like walking towards the bed. And then in a very non-Freudian way, his sword drops to the ground, which was sort of odd, like, I don't know. Shouldn't the sword rise at that point? Anyway, the sword drops to the ground.
Take a that's minus
and
a
you
point.
Just, you don't you hear any. You hear nothing, and then the screen sort of goes dark, and then it comes up, and you've got your little card there. And then actually, I was happy to find out that I apparently did very well. I
nice.
I performed
rated you
well.
In the performance?
No, he doesn't. You don't get like a number. Oh. You got an 8 out of 10. You did two things wrong.
You might want to qualify for some of our listeners that actual sex is probably a little different than this.
Yeah.
Actual sex might be different if you haven't had it.
Unless you're like at the Mustang
Right. For one thing, she didn't say, is that it? or what about me? So that was different than real sex.
It's more like
at least
in,
as far as I've experienced.
You play God of War, bed the women in God of War. It's more like that.
It is more like that.
Yeah. Health comes out of them and everything.
No, this is actually you're not only do you kill monsters, but apparently you're great in bed. So this game kind of has it all.
That's cool.
That's why he's the Witcher.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I don't want to harp on that part because
it's pretty easy.
Because it's a very silly part of the game. Yeah. It ought to probably not be in there just so that smart asses like us don't waste time on the podcast talking about it. Because seriously, it was like 30 seconds in the game, of which I played hours of, and I enjoyed it for all sorts of actual real reasons. We observe an awkward science. The combat. It really does some cool things. I think in the aborted podcast that we didn't post, we were making fun of the fact that they're bragging about the motion capture that they use to capture the combat movements. It actually pays off in this. It does some really neat things that's actually sort of based a little bit on timing as you play the game. It's, I mean, basically you're clicking on things until they die. There's not that much strategy. It's not an action game. But there is elements of it that, like, if you time your mouse presses right, certain moves will happen that are choreographed, and it adds a level of engagement that I haven't seen in other games. The story is quite deep, and I think that and the atmosphere is cool too, and I think that's where it benefits from being based on a series of novels. Like, you can tell right from the start that this wasn't just like five guys sitting around, you know, a conference room in Orange County going like,
let's say that it's the kingdom of Phyrexia and there's elves. Okay, yeah, elves.
Instead it was one guy doing that.
You can tell. It was one guy doing it in Poland.
Instead, you could tell he's got the, what's that berserker? He's wearing, whoever wrote it is wearing a berserker shirt.
But if you want to make a fuck berserker, if you like to giving suck,
It's got that.
I would like to add that just because it's based on novels doesn't mean it's instantly
no, you're
brilliant.
No, that's true. And in fact, the novels haven't been released in the U.S. here, but they did stick an excerpt from one of the stories, I think, in the box with an English translation. And Sean Malloy and I both read this.
It's one of the most sad things I've written a while.
Hero of the Web?
It's pretty bad, yeah. Well, I actually thought we could bring it in for a Hero of the Web.
We should, because there's a comic, there's a Dark Horse comic that came with our collector's edition of Hellgate, and I tried to read. And I gave you know, my test before. I need some name for it, but when you're in the bathroom, and it's like, so when you're sitting there, and if, like, you'd rather read this or, like, the pharmaceutical information on, like, baby powder or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really stopped reading. I got about three pages in, and it was like, the dump became the kind that you take in an airport, in a dirty airport or something, rather than in the comfort of your own home. You know, like, put your feet up and...
I can't make any snap judgments based on, you know, this little excerpt, because obviously it could have been hastily translated
by a machine. It's possible that this is not the actual translation that we're going to get when the book really comes out in English.
These novels are like an excuse. Like, it's the kind of thing where, you know, one character's like, where are we going to go now? And then the next guy's like, can't you see they have reft a cleft in the weft and wane?
You're talking about the Hellgate.
Yeah.
Well, in The Witcher
They've torn a cleft in the weft and weave of reality. And, like, I mean, it's like that kind of shit. And then you look at the next page is a devil getting, like, some, like, part of his limbs chopped off. And then, like, the next page is kind of the same thing, and people just, like, posing and, like, grunting and stuff. And then it's back to the other guy talking about that same, like, penthouse, like, Shakespearean era penthouse pet forum letters.
Wow. Oh, so this is Dark Horse Comics.
Yeah.
Because there's Dark Horse ads throughout Hellgate. I was wondering.
They put some good stuff out.
Oh, yeah, sure they do.
Definitely
they
isn't.
For sure.
This is the kind of thing that it's bad. It's unspeakably bad.
Okay, so we'll do a Heroes of the Web at that.
There's a scene in the mini. Oh, maybe we can save that scene for the Hero of the Web then.
Of what?
For The Witcher.
Oh, for The Witcher?
I was about to describe one of the events in the novel thing. So
okay.
Maybe we'll save it.
Save it.
So the combat is great. There's...
Fuck it, tell us. What's
the... Well, you want to hear this? You want to hear the story?
Cut to the chase.
All right, go back to the story, Sean. He wants to hear
the story. Oh, you
want my story? Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, there's a scene where The Witcher, what's his name, Geralt?
Yeah, Geralt.
He goes to visit this wizard or whatever, and the wizard has made an illusionary paradise. And there's like some girl, totally naked girl, like carrying some apples. And like, of course, he's like, "Would you like to make it with my illusion?" He's like, "Oh, well, she's an illusion. Can you feel her too?" And he's like, "Oh yes." And then he turns
Holy
it down.
Shit.
But it's just it's one of those scenes where you read it and you're just like,
"Wow." That's what
I observed an awkward silence
when that Salvatore dude meets the penthouse letters, man. Yeah. That's when you get some of the finest fantasy.
but I am really enjoying the game. I am. I do think this is can turn out to be one of the great RPGs of the year and maybe of the last few.
Well, you really dug Neverwinter Nights 2 expansion.
Too. I did really dig Neverwinter Nights 2 expansion quite a bit. This is a very different game. I mean, that's a D&D game. This is a whole different thing.
What inanimate object would you give it?
I would give The Witcher a rabid squirrel.
That's not inanimate.
You said inanimate.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. I don't even know how to score.
Give it a cash call.
See, I don't know how to cash call. No, I don't know what object I give it. Also, I do want to say, though, that if you do start The Witcher, there's a prologue. And the prologue, which basically teaches you everything there is to learn in the game, and there's a lot of different stuff you have to learn, goes on for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's fairly linear, and there are a shitload of cutscenes and a lot of exposition, and it gets a little wearying. But if you hang in there and get past that, when you get to the formal start of Act 1, then you're kind of in a more Oblivion-like environment where you can go do what you want, and there's quests open up to you that you don't have to tackle in any order.
It's that sort of environment, too? It's just this big, natural-looking world?
It's a big world, but there is more of a, you know, there's a little more direction, which I appreciate. Mm-hmm. Like, Oblivion was almost too open to me. But, you know, and there is a main quest, but they're also, right in the very first town, there's like, you know, like in WoW, there's like a bulletin board with quests that you can take if you want to. And those will take you in different directions. But I do find it a little more guided than Oblivion. Okay. And that's, I guess, it. Yeah, it uses, one more thing, it uses the BioWare's Aurora engine. And the only problem with that, it actually looks great, but the problem is the freaking load times are a pain in the ass in this game. So
ew.
It's another downside. Okay. Like you'll be in one of the towns and there's a little shack there to go into and you're like, I wonder if I go in there, is there going to be a quest or maybe just an item I want to take or whatever. And you hesitate on even going in the shack because you're like worried about the load time. So that sucks.
Mm.
That's one of my points I'm taking off the score.
That's the point right there.
Yeah, that reminds me. We out. We out. We out. We out. We out.
We'll be back.